We're just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah,
to
absolutely,
true
because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our Really Radio Show 79 for Friday, October 2nd. Jeez, the year's just flying by. That'd be 2015, where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversations that make you go, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Cowan, with my usual suspects. Now you're usual, see? See,
yes.
I've got Michael and another usual suspect, Ophelia Falls. This is your third time on, so...
You're officially a usual suspect.
You're now a usual suspect.
I'm number three.
At the moment, abso-friggin-lutely. And of course, you can find everything, well, pretty much everything that Ophelia and Michael do over at their Tumblrs, which are linked in our show notes out at the website. You can go to orlyradio.com and look at the show notes for episode 79, and you'll find them right there. A runner from last week, you know, we make mistakes. If you find one in this show, go ahead and pause the podcast or the video or whatever you got out there and send us a note at areallyradiopodcast@gmail.com or phone it in or text it in, whatever you want to do at 470-222-6759. Now, last week, yeah, there were some crazy echo things last week, and many listeners had a less than desirable experience and were not as patient as those panelists here on the show, and they stopped listening before we actually managed to switch audio devices and make everything better. So if you are listening now to this show, go back and just persevere for just a little bit longer through the first segments, and you'll get to a better experience, I promise you. I unfortunately did not go back and look at the timestamp, which I should have, because I left myself a note, and I didn't, and you see what happens? I need parental supervision. That's what I need. I need an adult.
You are an adult.
Damn it.
You need a better adult.
I need another adult. I need a second out here. Okay. So anyway, sorry about that. Also, apparently there seems to be something wrong with the Patreon page. And if, for those of you that are not aware what Patreon is, for us independent media producers, it is a way for you to support us and the things that we do and basically give us money, preferably on a recurring basis. We take any denomination you'd like to give. But apparently there's something wrong with our Patreon page, which is out at www.patreon.com/Cowen, C-O-W-E-N. There's apparently something wrong there, and I'm going to go fix it in my absolutely copious free time sometime between now and maybe next week. But, you know, money's great and all that, but this is really a labor of love. And if you love the show and you don't have any money, which I totally understand, things that would help us grow and keep us going and motivated to do it, word of mouth, tell other people about the show, and positive reviews on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, likes on YouTube, Facebook, you know, participate in the show. And that will help us grow and keep us wanting to do more.
Yeah, so. Feedback is great, and hell, you can even contribute to the show. You can send us topic ideas, because I think we have firmly established that we will literally talk about anything.
Yes.
There is no situation in which we don't have an opinion. So whatever you are interested in, I'll rant about it, and these guys will try to calm me down, I'm sure.
Yeah, we will occasionally talk you off the ledge, but only occasionally. Only when it's in our best interest and we've had a good laugh. And speaking of having a good laugh, thank you, Little Bear, for joining us in the chat room. Yes, we have one of those too. You can participate in the show by going over to our webpage, and next to the video that should be playing for this episode or whatever episode happens to be current that week, there is a chat. And you don't have to have a password. You can make up a username. It's completely anonymous. And you can yell at us during the show.
Little Bear is saying hi. And to thank her for popping up, I would like to say that you can find her performance Facebook. Search Little Bear the Bearded Lady. She is. And she's awesome. And she's also very thoughtful. She does a lot of very good commentary, editorial type articles. So it's super cool that she's listening in, because she is an enlightened human being.
We like enlightened human beings. And us enlightened human beings... Oh, wait. Hang on. I have an enlightened other cross species. I have a cat. Oh,
jeez. Oh, dear.
Oh.
Oh. Hi, Sprocket.
Hello, Sprocket.
Sprocket, no.
Sprocket now, is invading the show.
Now is not
and make it out.
Now is not the time, Sprocket. Yes, I love you, too. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Go away. Thank you. Okay. There we go. I'm back. Okay. Let's get into the headlines, because there's like 20 of them, and even more than that. On September 30th, President Obama signed 7 laws, according to the Sunlight Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization to bring, I don't know, sunlight into the political process and tell us what the heck is going on out there. So there's S-230, S-501, H-R-23, H-R-2051, H-R-719, S-2082, and H-R-3614. I have links to all of those in the show notes. Let's see. Provide for the conveyance of property to the Yukon... I can't even pronounce that. Somewhere in Alaska, New Mexico Navajo Water Settlement, National Windstorm Impact Reduction Act reauthorization. These are probably mostly black bag operations. We don't even know what the hell they are, you know? Oh, look, there's a TSA Office of Inspection Accountability Act. Oh, that actually might, that sounds really good. Agricultural Reauthorizations Act, whatever that is. Department of Veterans Affairs Expiring Authorities Act. Who titles these things?
I think the point more than whatever they're talking about, because it's complicated legalese and we can't mm-hmm. make sense of it. The point is, the point that I take away from it is that our supposed do-nothing president is doing stuff. Despite every effort of the conservatives to the contrary, he is doing stuff.
Right.
He's doing lots of stuff, and he's very proactive.
Laws are continuing to be made and signed, and there is progress. It may be small, meek, and mild, but things are going on. Other things that are going on, the Japanese decided to figure out whether or not weightlessness, being in space, would have an effect on the taste of whiskey. And after 2 years of being at the International Space Station, the samples came back from NanoRacks LLC, which was the company that manages the experiments on the U.S. side of the station. And apparently, according to the people that know these things, it tastes different. I'm not sure that different is better, but being able to say that this is space whiskey, I think
that's pretty awesome.
That's probably going to raise the price of that bottle, no matter what.
I've got feelings on the whole space whiskey thing.
What are your feelings on space whiskey? I love that I can say that sentence.
Space whiskey.
What are your feelings on space whiskey?
Before I continue with my feelings, I have a card for this.
Of course she has a card for this.
Ophelia has taken to writing index cards.
We
live in the future!
That's fantastic.
Okay, I've got voiceovers for you.
Excellent.
So, space whiskey, like... Why does it taste different? You see, like Little Bear just said in the chat room, is it a reaction of the alcohol and ozone? I wonder. Alcohol and the vacuum of space. I also wondered, did they try it only on Earth or did they try it in space? Because drunk astronauts sound like both a comedy and a tragedy movie at the same time.
Well, and I love it.
They hang out at the space bar.
While the actual science of what's going on is fascinating to me because I'm a nerd, I'm more just happy that somebody did this. Somebody who's you know a fucking scientist who's getting paid a lot of money for what they do sat there in a room with a bunch of other scientists and pitched this idea. Okay, guys, I think we should find out what happens when you bring alcohol into space. And the entire room went, let's do this. You people are doing the Lord's work.
Among other recent experiments was an 11-year-old's concoction flew on the ISS, and another company launched a yeast on a sounding rocket that was later collected to form the basis of a beer. So, yes, apparently we will do anything to get a buzz.
I'm so conflicted on the whole idea of space booths because we're in the future. Soon Han Solo will be a reality.
Well, you know, what else is going to be served at 10 forward? I mean, you got to have this good stuff, right?
But, like, I don't know, man. Like, Are we going too fast into the future? Is the future being now too soon?
I don't think you can choose how fast the future gets here. Because it's just tomorrow. You know? It's
That's some existential crisis shit, man. Just, don't blow my mind this early in the evening. I'm not that drunk yet.
The future is in a couple minutes. You know, it's here. It's just waiting to be experienced. It's right there. Your future is today's present.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, look, anyway.
Chat room, Buzz Aldrin, new favorite pun.
Yes, that would be, no, that would be the name of the drink.
Yep.
The Buzz Aldrin.
And he'd go with it too.
He would too. He'd probably have a few of those. Okay, and speaking of Buzz Aldrin and things that affect old spacers like him, Alzheimer's. There is new research. A new Alzheimer's treatment fully restores memory function of mice who received the treatment. 75% got their memory function back. But that's amazeballs. And this is coming out of Australia. They've come up with a non-invasive ultrasound technology that clears the brain of neurotoxic amyloid plaques, structures that are responsible for the memory loss and decline of cognitive function in Alzheimer's patients.
Very interesting.
I like this is like a very personal sort of effect on me because I have a lot of people in my life over time mm-hmm. who have been affected by Alzheimer's, and the fact that they can ultrasound it away is amazing. I'm looking at the chat room and Little Bear has a point that because we didn't do it, it might be hard for it to happen here. Which is how that sort of happened, you know, that sort of thing happens.
Yeah, but you know, it's, I would fly 14 hours, 18 hours, 24 hours to go get that treatment.
I would fly mom, dad, grandpa, cousin, yeah. Joe, whatever, absolutely. To go do this because 75% of them were just better.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's a non-invasive procedure. No surgery. It's outpatient. It's like going in for a massage of your brain.
Of your brain.
With ultrasound. Alzheimer's is probably my number one fear of things that ailments that could happen to me. Because that's like the absolute last thing that I want is to lose my mind.
Yeah.
You know, to be like the HAL 9000 with, you know, the memory chips coming up. My mind's going, Dave.
I can feel it. My mind is going.
Well, you know, and the other thing is aside from what they've done it for, this could mean a lot for strokes caused by embolisms and that sort of thing.
It could also affect those that have difficulty sleeping, because sleeping is one of the brain's ways of flushing out neurotoxins, and those that cannot sleep, those neurotoxins will build up, and then you're at a greater chance of, well, brain damage, essentially.
Well, Michael and I need to go to Australia as soon as they're done with this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no kidding.
Maybe get some sleep.
Well, first I need to figure out why I can't sleep. Then I can figure out how to treat it.
Yeah.
I mean, what's a little ultrasound between friends?
You know, a couple good blasts of this. You know, if all it's doing is affecting those plaques and it's not actually really affecting anything else. That's the main thing is it affecting any other neurochemistry? But if it's just getting rid of the garbage, is like a garbage collector, you know, just going through, I'm just scraping off the barnacles, no big deal, you know, coming through. That could be just something that you go in like every couple months for and just all of a sudden like, oh yeah, I just went in for a brain cleaning.
Well, you know, well, that's the other thing. Like, we live in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, you could start to show signs or you could be seen as, you know, very high risk. And they'd be like, you know what? Just to be safe, we need you to go get a brain massage and see where it goes. Like, we could be stopping this illness in its tracks. With something that's less invasive than even insulin shots.
You know, with this kind of thing, I could imagine a treatment, and I hope the guys from Australia are listening. Imagine putting somebody into an fMRI, the functional magnetic resonance imager system, and doing this at the same time. That way you can actually see the blood vessels and the changes, and it's like, okay, so I think, we need a little bit more over here in the corpus callosum or whatever, you know, I think that'll work, you know, and just actually to be able to map, you know, where your brain needs a little bit of cleaning. I think that's just an amazing thing. I mean, we clean out arteries for, you know, the plaques that build up around our heart and things like that. This is just the next level of that. And I think this could be something I want a franchise. I want them on every street corner next to the Starbucks.
Right. Well, like go in for a latte.
Yeah, go in for a latte. Yeah, get your shoulders rubbed and your brain cleaned all at the same time. I think it's a great thing. And maybe a mani-pedi. A mani-pedi and space whiskey and you're good. I think we have our business plan for the future. That's going to be some good stuff. Okay, moving right along. Scientists have also invented a new steel that is as strong as titanium, but lightweight. It's ultra lightweight because it is an aluminum steel alloy.
Is awesome.
Just make that transparent, and we really got something going here.
Well, we already have transparent aluminum, really.
I know.
But I see what you're getting at. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Exactly. Yeah.
I see what you're getting at.
Exactly. Steel aluminum. That's great. And,
you know,
yes, yes.
Well, I was thinking about this, like when I'm reading it, and literally the first thing that came to mind is once again, mankind is considering metal, dealing with metal as a huge leap and bound. This is our trademark as a species because we've got like the Bronze Age,
Iron Age, yeah.
And the Iron Age. Yeah. And now we're in the aluminum steel alloy and invisible metal stage.
The invisible metal age.
Future anthropologists will be like, ancient human beings took this long to figure out that they could mix these two metals. Blah, 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 blah. And it'll be completely commonplace by then.
And we found these little artifacts that said that they thought they were living in the future. I almost got Surge to come out your nose. That's fun. Okay.
But that's a waste of Surge. Don't do that.
Not from my side of the camera. It's fine. So IBM, speaking of things that are innovative, IBM has created a new carbon nanotube solution that could move chips beyond silicon.
This fucking fascinates me so hard, you have no idea.
I was waiting to hear exactly how passionate Michael was on this when I was reading the thing.
Carry on, Michael. Go ahead.
This is so fucking cool to me because we're getting down to the point, and this is something that has been going on. The article mentions Moore's Law, which was this idea that we're going to be able to cram more transistors into a smaller space or into the same amount of space incrementally so many years or so, like double every year or something like that.
Yeah, and kind of a doubling.
It's been sort of tapering off because science isn't perfect and we don't live in a perfect world. But this is one of those things where now Moore's Law is taking this huge jump because we're getting to the point where these things, these circuits – aren't just microscopic, they're like nanoscopic. It's amazing. We're almost to the point where a single transistor is just a molecule, which means that computers are just going to get fucking tiny. I mean, this thing does what your desktop does.
As he holds up a cell phone.
Maybe it doesn't do all of the functions, and maybe it doesn't do it quite as well, but this thing is your phone in your hand is a desktop computer. Pretty soon, this is going to be quaintly oversized because that's how small the circuits are getting.
It'll just be screen, battery, and an itty-bitty little chip running everything else.
Pretty soon, there will be no such thing as a desktop anymore. All computers will be laptops. All computers will be portable, and I fucking love this. Pretty soon, we'll be plugging them straight into our heads and giving us the augmented reality that we want so much. Yes, please. I want this.
Yeah. Because
We live in the future.
Future.
Now, one interesting thing here is that I don't think they mentioned it, but since you're going with carbon nanotubes versus the silicon with, tin wires and things like that, there's something that happens at the molecular level called tin whiskers. When electrons pass through tin, especially the low lead solder variety that we have now, it crystallizes and you get tin whiskers, where literally it will grow into a little line and will bridge. And the only way that you can see it is with a scanning tunneling microscope, electron microscope. So basically when the chip dies, it's just dead. You're not ever going, it's not useful to even look, but they have seen it in the lab. They know that it happens. So it was one of my favorite little MacGuffins when a computer died for randomly no reason at all. Ah, tin whiskers. But this, I don't think carbon nanotubes are going to be susceptible to it. So as you get smaller and smaller, you're not going to have that same kind of crystalline growth of a metal, because it's a carbon nanotube, not a metal. So this may just be a much more, not only faster, smaller, and in every way, it'll probably be less power consumptive, and it will also be more resilient to things that just happen at that itty-bitty small scale. So it's doubly awesome.
Yeah, no, I think this is another one of those things where what we know that they can do now with it and what they're doing now is awesome, but it means so much for the future proper, mm-hmm. and what other applications, because once this kind of nanotechnology becomes commonplace, then we can find, you know, medical uses, like think about like microscopic pacemakers.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, you know, a tiny transistor that is that tiny can change the world again.
Again. Every day.
So, you know, so that's super exciting to think about. You know, I'm thinking about things like cochlear implants that don't have to be stuck on the outside, that they're just like a button, because all the circuitry is, you know, that big.
Oh, that we're going to get some amazing stuff in the next, 20 years. It's just going to be a different landscape. We're going to look back on all of this and think, oh, wow, they were so quaint, what with their 7-inch floppies and things like that. Oh, they were just so quaint. Oh, look at
man,
that. Reel to reel.
The 7-inch floppy is fucking quaint now. Come
on. Exactly, yeah. It was 320K, of course. I mean, yeah, it was definitely quaint compared to what we're sporting now.
And I got this USB flash drive in the shape of the symbol, the Starks of Winterfell. Nice. It came out of a loot crate and just let me have it. And I went to back up some stuff on it. I didn't have much to back up. It was just a file of all my pictures that I've collected for for tabletop gaming, because I like to have visual aids. And it's only 4 gigs. And I'm like, oh, that's adorable. You're only 4 gigs large.
Aww, look at it trying to be a thing.
Yeah, my largest thumb drive right now is 128 gig. Yeah, so it's, yeah, good stuff. Okay, so things that will change the future, because I've been concerned about this. You know, I am a bit of an environmentalist. Not so much that I'm not a insane consumerist of all these things. You know, I generate plenty of e-waste and various other things, but I am concerned about it. I may not be living up to it, so you can call me a horrible person all you like, but at least I'm looking towards the future and how we can fix this. But I'm not the only one, thankfully, and some scientists have been investigating mealworms and how they can apparently happily and safely eat styrofoam. Styrofoam has been the bane of our existence
since we invented it,
in as much as we love it to hold our hot liquids and things like that. But yeah, it doesn't go away readily.
I mean, unless you turn it into napalm and then you can melt it away. But listeners, don't make napalm.
Don't do that. Napalm.
I can't endorse that.
Yeah, no, that's not good.
But literally, like, my concern with mealworms eating styrofoam is, how safe are the mealworms to eat or to be eaten? Like, I'm someone who eats bugs. I do that. But
sure. Well, we're all going to be eating bugs eventually anyway, because it's going to be the number one source of protein that's going to be, you know,
economically. Oh, yeah, no. I throw down on some crickets. But, and mealworms are, because of their lifespan, they weird me out a little bit. But it's all great that, you know, they can eat them because mealworms are really easy to breed. And that's cool, but everything eats mealworms.
In a second study focused on the mealworm's gut microbes, which are able to break down the plastic safely, the researchers were able to turn this bacteria into a film that they applied to polystyrene, a, you know, a foam that is that makes a, the same plastic in styrofoam. The bacteria were also able to eat through the polystyrene, but at a much slower rate than the mealworms. So basically, the gut biota of these mealworms is what's actually able to digest it and turn it into something useful.
Yeah, so, which is fascinating.
So they're eating it just fine.
This is yet another example of something that I always bring up, especially when any kind of nuclear argument comes on the table. Mother Nature don't give a crap. Mother Nature can solve any problem.
Just give it time. Just give it time.
Give her a few generations of the lower life forms, and she'll solve the problem.
Well, that's the great thing about animals with really short lifespans, because, you know, my scientific background is in evolution. That's my thing. That's what I tried to do college for.
evolution and genetics. High five.
Yeah, high five, yeah. Things with small lifespans can adapt so quickly. Because, I mean, an elephant now is going to look the same as their grandfather elephant. But mealworms from when I was a kid, eating them when I was told not to, and mealworms from when I can go to the store and buy some to eat, may not be the same under a microscope. So, so this is one of those, like, the gut protein probably has, like, hardened over time so that they can do this. But, I mean, a mealworm will eat anything that doesn't eat it back. So it's a great place to start. I just wonder about, you know, if that means that the mealworms, because of this thing in their stomach, that they're still totally safe to eat along the lines. Because this also means a lot for animal husbandry. And, you know, because a lot of people have mealworms for their birds, for their lizards, certain rodents, zoos use a lot of mealworms for everything.
Oh, yeah.
And if we could, you know, like, you know, the zoo, if the zoo had like a styrofoam drop off thing and then they could wash this, you know, wash it off there and feed it to their mealworms, and the mealworms are still edible for other parts of the food chain, this could help wildlife sanctuaries become a lot more self-sustainable.
It'd also be a carbon negative solution as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
because they'd be liberating all of that trapped carbon.
Well, they'd be sequestering it back into carbon based life forms.
Yeah. Which is what we need.
And that's what we need. We need the carbon sequestering. So not just the,
I just that word is so counterintuitive because it's getting this carbon back into circulation.
Right.
But that's sequestering. The sequestering means to hide something. I don't know. It's a fucking weird ass word because English sucks ass.
Yeah. Well, the real problem with the whole thing is that we've, in the process of pulling all the components out of the ground to make the plastics and the styrofoams and all these things, it's not a perfect solution. So a lot of that has just gone into the atmosphere. So now we need to bring that back in and put it back into a solid and make it go away and stay away and get out of the environment.
Yeah, it back into
the environment in a place that is where not belongs. Where we are, basically.
Well, you get it back where it belongs.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, Mother Nature doesn't care. And another person that doesn't care is a disgraced scientist who was, he claimed that they had cloned a human being. He claimed. Apparently, that was an outright lie. However, his bio-research firm has continued to clone dogs. And no one is quite sure why.
Okay.
What have you to say about this?
I am reminded of that scene from which one was it? Was it Total Recall, in which he took the dog to the cloning place, or was it The Sixth Day? Schwarzenegger.
That was Sixth Day. Yeah.
But you know, he took the family pet, which had recently died, to the cloning place so they could bring the dog back. It's like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it, we live in the future. But
yeah, but like, yeah, but here's the deal: like, there's something people don't understand about cloning, and it's okay. My biggest complaint when it comes to cloning.
Okay.
It's not copying anything but the genetic fingerprint.
And you're even that, it does imperfectly.
You're making a twin.
Yes.
That's it. So whether I'm cloning my dog or I'm cloning myself, what I'm making is a little brother or sister that looks the same as the original. You are not making their child. You are not replicating the creature.
Right.
You are making a twin on a time delay.
Yeah, until we can do the thing where we can download people's brains into a computer program, which we can't do yet because brains are incredibly complicated, you can't get the same person out of the process.
Right. And you're not going to get the same pet. Now, I'll say this. The good that I can see out of cloning dogs is the idea that a lot of breeds are losing a breed standard. And if there's, you know, a dog breeder has a dog that does very well and the dog gets ill, having a cloned puppy for it to raise so that it has a similar personality, whatever. And then you have the same kind of breeding stock. But at the same time, like, people are going to look at this dog that looks like their dead dog and they're going to pretend like it's the same one. And when people's realities do not match up with their dreams, that could end up dangerous for the pet.
It could, because you're reducing the biodiversity in the species.
Yeah, there's all sorts of problems with biodiversity and inbreeding, and
right.
Because the cloning process creates something as close to the original as possible with our current understandings of genetics.
But that is for what you're looking at is the case where you're going to put that back into population. They aren't putting these back into population.
They're not saying what's happening to the
dog.
They're not saying what's happening. And B, anyone who's watched Jurassic Park knows it doesn't matter if you try not to put it into circulation, life will find a way. As we just discussed in the last entry, life finds a way because Mother Nature don't give a damn.
You're right, right. But Soam Biotech, S-O-O-A-M Biotech, is the only lab in the world that makes genetically identical copies of dogs for pet owners. So right now, it's kind of like a little vanity, you know, a very niche industry. You know, these are the same people.
One of those proof of concept things that you find at like E3 or some shit.
Yeah. But you know what? Like this whole getting a clone of your dog thing for rich people, because I saw the price tag, and that's a lot of zeros.
$100,000.
But they said the same thing about like tiny pigs, and now it's not hard to get a tiny pig. And it didn't take very long for tiny pigs to go from super expensive to, I mean, like, I got a phone call a couple of years ago from a friend of mine. She was living in the dorms, and there was this horrible noise, and she was like, oh, somebody brought their tiny pig to school. Just
interesting.
Like, the thing with, like, because, like, Puggles used to be expensive, you know, the first, like, big designer dog. And now you sneeze in any direction, and there's a Puggle for the regular price of a dog.
Well, dogs are a highly malleable species. You know that their traits change rather easily over short term.
Relatively short term for you know a mammal.
Yeah, not very many generations for that. Soam has done apparently 600 dogs so far. I don't think it's 600 of the same dog. It's not an assembly line kind of process.
If only.
But if it was, there's another article that came out in 2006 that I do not have linked, but I'm just going to mention it. And it was where the FDA said that cloned meat was safe to eat. Of course, knowing it genetically, yeah, it would be perfectly safe to eat.
Eat Dolly?
I don't believe they did because I think they you don't usually eat something that you've named. That is just one trigger warning. I'm pretty sure that they did shear Dolly for wool and things like that at certain times.
I wonder how many like people
Dolly
had
was
to agree
20
to
years
eat.
Ago. Dolly was 20 years ago, so.
Well, I wonder how many animals had to be cloned for safe to eat studies before they were like, yeah, no, it doesn't really matter.
I don't know.
Because, I don't know because like, if they were like cloned meat is not safe to eat until we have more tests, does that mean that a whole bunch of edible, like, animals were being cloned willy-nilly just in case they needed to be slaughtered, just in case?
I have no idea.
Because that falls back into, like, Michael's, you know, nature finds a way thing, because if they weren't all turned into sandwiches, then...
Well, Alphabet
could have been reintroduced into the population.
Alphabet, you know, now, you know, Google's X division. Sergey Brin was working very hard on a cloned meat burger. You know, just the meat without the animal.
I remember reading something about that back in the day.
Apparently they're still, well, it's not that old, and they're still working on it. They've apparently added more fat to actually make it taste better, because that's what we all crave. The fat is what tastes really good with all that protein. Mm. Apparently it did not taste very good. It was also like a $10,000 hamburger or something at that time. But eventually, you know, our meat vats are going to be generating Soylent something or other very shortly, I think, you know.
Well, you know, Soylent exists right now. You can buy a product called Soylent, and it's a food substitute. Yeah. And I have a friend who, having seen the movie, you know, she and her fiance wanted to try this Soylent thing, but they were still concerned that it might be Soylent Green mislabeled. So you can actually look up recipes on how to make your own Soylent. And so they make homemade, not people, Soylent, just in case.
Well, that would be that would be Soylent White. Soylent Green is people. Soylent White is something else.
We live in the future.
That's right. We live in the future.
Well, I keep waiting for the giant yeast fats iRobot style, because that was an idea that I thought was freaking perfect, because it makes sense. Yeast is really easy to grow, and it absorbs whatever you put into it, you know?
Yeah. Well, the yeast vats are certainly an easier thing than algae vats. Algae is, you know, rather picky, actually, about all of it.
Surprisingly, considering it's everywhere.
Yeah, but it's designed basically by nature to be in that spot.
Yeah.
So when you try to just make your own and let's make biodiesel out of this, it doesn't like that so much. And it's more art than science. Well, really, both. Six in one and half a dozen in the other.
Yeah.
I would like to point out that we have a plethora of people in the chat room. We actually have...
Who are you?
We have equal numbers of hosts and guests, actually, in the chat room right now.
This is a fucking banner day for us, because this has never happened before.
Thank you, friends, for listening to my constant badgering.
This is outstanding. And I believe we have Jarman Bonday. Daybon. Sorry.
This show will go somewhere yet.
From a Play on Nerds podcast. He's out there right now listening to us and participating in the chat room. So, woohoo! Yay!
Hi, people.
Glad to have you.
For anybody who's listening and not in the chat room, we had a lovely conversation about eating bugs. And Soylent Green washes down well with some space whiskey.
Yeah,
because, that's right. Michael...
We live in the future.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I'm going to skip over one article here and go to another one because of the living in the future thing, because they've now made a razor that shaves your face with a laser.
When I heard this story, the only thing I think of was that Superman cartoon in which he's shaving in a mirror with his heat vision. I'm just like, really, Superman? Really? As if I didn't have enough reasons to hate you.
Now, see, my favorite
bastard.
Superman shaving thing is just like the unclipped fingernails, and he's just like, well, screw it. This is Man of Steel, whatever.
Yeah.
No, okay, so I want Superman. if you can shave your face with a laser, I wonder how warm it is. I wonder
probably
how
bad.
Permanent it is.
Well, it's not
because, you know, laser hair removal is already a thing, and...
Well, this is going across your skin, not into it.
Well, like, even... Not all laser hair removal does that. It's just the heat of it cooks your hair follicles. So is it, like, one or two really close shaves, and then you're done?
No, I am reminded of a sketch from Saturday Night Live with, that had, you know, a razor with like 15 blades or something, and like the 12th blade shaves the bone to give you a more angular
appearance.
That was
Mad TV, because Mad TV does the gross out stuff. Yeah.
That was Mad TV? Okay. Yeah, it was hilarious. But that kind of reminds me of things like this. This thing is $159. You can get your own Scarp Laser Razor, which, according to the company, has many benefits, including no scratches, no razor burn, which is amusing because it would be a laser burn, wouldn't it? And a close and smooth shave. The razor is made out of machined aluminum and uses intense pulsed light to remove hair. One of the prototype issues is that it was only able to cut certain hair colors, but apparently
it sounds
that
like laser hair removal on a temporary scale. So it's a racket.
Interesting. Interesting. But for $159, that's way less expensive than
laser hair
removal. Actual laser hair removal.
And it's not that much more expensive than a conventional razor, because a nice one that's actually going to last for a while is like $100.
It's actually right in the middle, because laser hair removal, depending on where you go, like when I underwent the process, which hurts and doesn't stick, letting everyone know now, it was $90 a session. I had 3 sessions. So depending on the color of your hair is how much you do it.
Yeah.
So this sounds like a substitute for that that doesn't go into the subcutaneous part of your skin. But I know that, you see, right in there, it hurts.
Yeah.
And it didn't work as far as the actual process that we have now, where you go to a licensed professional. And I feel like this is going to be like a fire hazard, a burning hazard.
I would like to point out that the bearded lady is talking about the laser hair removal. I would like to just point that out in...
Oh yeah,
in the chat room, Lil Bear is discussing that, and that is hilarious. You have done well.
That's
thank
how
you,
she
Lil
got
Bear.
There, like she has a lovely beard, and it's a dainty beard. It's adorable that she has a proper feminine beard, but she has it on. I know she has blog posts about it and things, but she tried all that and it didn't work as like God's will, and now she makes her living that way, and we both have had this procedure, and I can tell you it hurts. It smells. You have to put ice all over your face for a really long time, or wherever it is you're getting it done. Like, I saw a guy have to put like a pound of ice on his dangly bits because he was getting laser hair removal on that.
Oh,
and I was like, no, no. So I can only imagine somebody who, like, if you're using this laser and it works, that it's going to be deeply unpleasant.
Deeply?
Until you're used to it.
Okay. Deeply unpleasant heard. All right, let's
also
move along.
Kid. Look at all the new people. More people. Yay.
More people? Oh my gosh, we do. Who's Tippy? Hi, Tippy. Welcome to the chat room. Okay. So, moving right along. My gosh, there's so many people. I'm getting distracted by actually having people out there. Was it last week? No, a couple weeks ago, we were discussing that womb tanks are actually still something that's viable. And this got me to thinking, and I was rereading a couple of my favorite novels where womb tanks are actually, you know, a sci-fi MacGuffin thing where, you know, people that essentially can live forever, they don't have to go through the trials of childbirth and carrying a little being for 40 weeks. No, instead, they have womb tanks. And now, British doctors have gotten the go-ahead to carry out a womb transplant for the first time. I believe we were discussing that was one of the hang-ups that we were going to have. We were going to have a problem with that not being able to take place. And, oh, look. It's going ahead. Now it doesn't have to. It wouldn't necessarily have to go into another person. It could go into a tank.
I'm certainly curious about the logistics. I mean, how are you gonna hook it up to, you know, the umbilical system that needs to survive? But that's all, you know, medical jargon. The real kicker here for me is how the fuck are they gonna get conservative Bible thumping, you know, mouth breathers to agree to this?
Well, they're doing it
because it's a living thing. No,
they're doing it in Britain. That's how.
And it, yeah, Britain's full of conservative Bible thumping mouth breathers too. They just don't win as often.
No, not
because
nearly
they have
as
more
many
parties.
Yeah, they just don't win in politics as often.
I'll say this: like,
well, that's how
I read this article, and my heart started to flutter because I have so many friends and a few family members that are trans women, and all they want is to have a danged baby. And yeah, carry their own baby. And if womb transplants are a thing and everything can be hooked up, we've got a way to hook it all up, then people who have had who have gender correction surgery or people who have suffered great traumas have a chance of being able to carry their own kid.
This could be amazing.
Which this could be great because at the end of the article, it mentions that the women who are slated to get it in their bodies instead of just in a tank are they can only give birth via C-section should this work. Yeah. And that's fine. If you're willing to have a C-section, I mean, if you're willing to have a uterus put in, I assume that you'd be okay. I mean, I may be wrong, but you'd be okay with it being opened up to be checked on and or whatever when there's a baby coming out. But this, when you think about opposite assigned sex trans couples, you could, you know, you could be able to save up money for your husband's uterus to be put into your body. And Little Bear, I was just about to point out, Little Bear said in the chat room, you know, women with PCOS have very low fertility, and a lot of times it's because the cysts in the syndrome spread. Mm-hmm. And if you could get, you know, a new womb and your body doesn't reject it, and I would assume with all that surgery, you'd also be getting, you know, your cysts handled, a healthy uterus so that you can carry your own kids. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah, it would be a heavily examined, you know, practice because of the whole it's essentially an organ transplant. So you can't have. You got to work on that whole rejection thing.
Yeah, organ transplants are a mess. But this is – we are increasingly moving towards this fascinating trend that I could only – previous to now, I could only envision in like really advanced sci-fi of gender having no meaning because we've got such control over the human body. And we're showing that more and more that you can literally be whatever you want at whatever time you choose to be.
It definitely gives a lot more fluidity to gender fluidity,
which makes me happy as a gender fluid human being.
I just like it in the Nietzschean Übermensch sense of, you know, us having mastery over our form so that we're no longer bogged down by physical trivialities. We can start working on, you know, intellectual pursuits, which is what really matters.
That would be
nice.
Well,
like this reminds me a lot of, for those of you who have seen it, and a lot of people do not like it, and this is not why I'm bringing it up, but one of the slogans for Repo the Genetic Opera that they use for their evil company GeneCo, which does organ rentals, is it's what's on the inside that counts.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-ba. Hey,
you know, and the whole idea of this dystopian society is that once we have championed this artificial or like womb tanks or that sort of thing for all organs, then we can have designer organs. Because what's on the inside that counts.
I would be all for that because I think my lungs, I have asthma. I want that to go away. So if you could just code that out of my replacement,
I'd
very
also
happy.
Like a much more effective liver because I love drinking. Give me a supercharged liver, please.
Yeah. Well, I mean, screw your frivolous things. Like I could have a designer uterus.
Frivolous? No, wait. Lungs and asthma. No, that's not frivolous.
That's not frivolous at all. These are quality of life things we're talking about here.
Well, yes, I mean, I would need both of those things.
and a liver that digests alcohol and does not turn it into a poison. That would be a fantastic thing because no hangovers.
Yep.
You know, but like, if you think about like, oh, you know, somebody has kidney damage. Well, it's fine. We've been growing him one since he showed the first signs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Here we go. you know, that sort of thing.
But when we get to the point of designer organs, common, you know, merely medical transplants like that are going to be dirt cheap and commonplace. You know?
Oh yeah, just a little thing like that. Oh, you need a new organ. No big deal.
You need a normal middle of the road mundane kidney? Yeah, give us 2 minutes. You know?
Might take more than 2 minutes. Yeah.
In my head it's still going back to Repo because one of the songs is called Mark It Up. It's just two brains mark it up. Like, you just imagine, like, you'll have the Walmart and the Big Lots brains.
Well,
and then
yeah,
you have the Tiffany's brain.
It doesn't matter what, you know, advances we make, there's always going to be somebody who does horrible things with it.
Right.
But in the end, I have faith that decency will win out, because despite all the garbage that's going on in society right now, decency is winning out.
Is this our cue to talk about Benghazi?
Yes.
Great idea. Okay, let's talk about Benghazi. So apparently the whole thing was entirely meant to sabotage her campaign. We knew this.
Yeah.
Intrinsically, yeah. We knew this.
We all knew this because everything out of Fox News' mouth is a bald-faced lie.
Yeah.
But now we have proof.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to take this opportunity to introduce the world to a little-known person that we're going to hear an awful lot about. His name is Kevin McCarthy. He's a Republican out of California, and now that John Boehner has decided to step down from the Speaker of the House role.
Now that Boehner's given up.
Now that he's basically given the big FU to the party. This Kevin McCarthy person has been named basically the successor. And he's an interesting piece of work in that he's a dumb, dumb brick of a person. And I don't spread that kind of thing lightly, okay? A, he's given away the plan that Benghazi was meant to sabotage Hillary entirely. He's also, I think, spilled a couple other horrible plans that they had. But get this. I'm going to play something from the Rachel Maddow show. And we're just going to be introduced to him. And this is just lovely. Take it away,
we'll start
Rachel.
Tonight. With the place of the band on America. The place of the band on America.
It defies belief that the president would allow the ban on Iranian oil exports to be lifted and also stand by a Russia blackmails an entire continent, all the while keeping the place of the band on America.
The place of the band on America.
That was Kevin McCarthy. Okay?
What does that even fucking mean?
It doesn't mean anything. It's word salad.
It is sound and fury signifying nothing, to quote the Bard.
Yes.
You know who this guy reminds me of? And this is, and yes, it's because I watched this show way too fucking much. But this guy, the more I see about him, reminds me of Bobby Newport Jr. from Parks and Rec. That completely inept, bumbling idiot that ran for city council. This is that guy. He has no idea what he's fucking doing. He's an absolute moron.
Oh, wait. It gets better. I mean worse.
I know.
I mean better. Here, let's let Rachel continue the introductions.
Man's name is Jan Brewer. I'm sorry. That man's name is Kevin McCarthy. He's about to become Speaker of the House in Congress, which means he's about to be third in line to the presidency. So,
yeah, this guy.
God forbid, if something happened to President Obama and Vice President Biden became president, God forbid something then happened to Vice President Biden, Kevin McCarthy would become President of the United States. If, in fact, he gets elected Speaker by Republicans in Congress, which is expected to happen when they have that vote next week. If he does get elected Speaker, Kevin McCarthy will be the least experienced person in modern history to hold that job. As far as we can tell, Kevin McCarthy has passed two bills since he has been in Congress. One of them renamed a post office for an awesome Bakersfield country singer named Buck Owens. His other bill renamed a research facility, also in his district. Those appear to be the only substantive pieces of legislation he has ever passed since he has been in Congress. The last time anyone became speaker in Congress with as little experience as Kevin McCarthy, it was 1891. Roll call says today that when Charles F. Crisp became Speaker of the House in 1891, that was the last time somebody as inexperienced in Congress as Kevin McCarthy rose to become Speaker of the House. But this year, House Republicans think that Kevin McCarthy apparently is ready for the job.
It's...
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
It is hilariously upsetting. You are absolutely correct.
I want to contribute to the shitstorm of making fun of this guy. I really do, because he so fucking deserves it. But it feels so much like kicking the puppy who doesn't know any better than to piddle on the floor. You know?
Well, it's the thing, like you can't...
It's more like just being aware of why you should be angry.
I want to remind people that the year that they were talking about with the last inexperienced Speaker of the House, the only reason at all why that happened is because there was this little war and the country wasn't really the country. And when they put the country back together, almost everyone who had been part of the game was dead and they had to pick someone. The last time that politics was this desperate, we had gotten out of the Civil War, a president had been shot, and no one knew what to do.
Yes.
You can't take the piss out of something that's already taking the piss out of itself.
Yeah, that Christian
and that's
guy,
what's going on here.
He had been in office for 8 years at the time that he was tasked with that challenging office. But the beat goes on. He actually continues to open his mouth. By the way,
the audacity continues.
Should you be curious? Now there is a video. I do have it linked in the show notes. If you're curious whether or not this is just like a failure of memory or creativity or something, where he's just not getting it out of his mouth. You know, it's like it's all just wrapped up in his head. No, he's reading it off the papers in front of him.
He prepared this speech.
This is a prepared speech that he's reading. My 8-year-old, who's in second grade, has a better grasp of the English language than what this guy is about to present.
Oh yeah, she's way more eloquent than this grown-ass man who looked at this and said, yeah, this is about right. I'm going to say this on national television.
Yeah. In like his first ever... televised. Moving on.
After John Boehner unexpectedly resigned as speaker on Friday, real quick on Monday morning, they decided to roll out an effort to convince the country that Kevin McCarthy is ready to succeed him, that Kevin McCarthy is ready to be third in line to the presidency. Kevin McCarthy is ready to potentially become president if called to do so in an emergency.
He's not ready to play words with friends, okay? That's all I have to say. Okay,
well, true.
Look, you don't have to be smart to have money. You have to have money to be a politician. Therefore, a politician doesn't have to be smart, just rich, which, I mean, Tippy just said, but that's how I feel about the entire Republican Party.
Because that is the entire Republican Party. There's no two ways about it. They're all a bunch of rich idiots.
Let's let him bury himself a little bit here.
And so I think for the first time in his life, they rolled out Kevin McCarthy specifically to give a foreign policy address on Monday morning, which is where he got him talking about the place of the band on America.
Did he even know there were other countries before they told him he had to make the speech? I mean, really?
I don't know. I really don't. But it gets worse.
Frankly, we're a little hard to follow. In that same speech this week, for example, here was Kevin McCarthy on veterans issues.
Oh, no.
And those who return home are being disrespected by the VA. They can't keep the simple promise to all of our heroes to the need when they need it most.
All of our heroes to the need when they need it most.
You mean the VA that the Republican Party is constantly gutting?
Yes, but to the need. Not to the people, to the need of the...
Maybe, like, oh dear, did he forget, like should have had a V8?
Like, I feel like I'm bleeding out my eyes. Am I bleeding out my eyes?
He definitely did not stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. Definitely did not.
Like, this is why you don't skip breakfast, ladies and gentlemen. especially when the entire fucking world has to listen to you become the third most powerful person in the country that you reside. Don't skip breakfast. Don't forget the coffee. Don't forget your proofreader, because holy motherfucking hell, are you kidding me right now?
I don't think he could possibly have a proofreader. Let's listen to some of the other
things. Yeah, there's no way he let someone else read this.
No way. Yeah, no way.
Need. He also talked about war of radical Islam and how we must engage in this war of.
We must engage this war of radical Islam if our life depended on it, because it does.
If
our life depended on it.
I think, honestly, that nobody really knows enough about Kevin McCarthy as a national figure to know if this is how he always talks. But this is apparently how he talks when he tries
Rachel
to talk
Maddow
about foreign policy.
Is dragging him through the mud right now.
Well, it is the most
beautiful thing.
But there is really one point that she hasn't made that I feel the need to point out, is that we thought that W was a bad speaker.
Oh, no, no.
W
no, wait.
Sounds fucking cultured compared to this guy.
She makes that point. Hang on.
Oh, does she?
This safe zone would create a stem of flow of refugees, unlike during the surge in Iraq, when Petraeus and Crocker had an effective politically strategy to match the military strategy. We have isolated Israel while emboldening places like Iran. The absence of leadership over the past 6 years has had a horrific consequences all across the globe. In the past few years alone, I have visited Poland, Hungary, Estonia, Russia, and Georgia.
He said something about a surge. This has done nothing to Iraq. How dare you?
I'm dead. I have to be dead, and this is what hell is. Listening to this man speak.
What will bring you back to life is the commentary, the play-by-play in the chat room right now. Because I swear to my gods, your gods, and every god in between, that this is a practical joke.
It can't be.
I wish it was.
This
because
is
then I wouldn't want to hang myself right now.
I have noticed a propensity in Onion articles, in their headlines and the way that they write, to actually be more prophetic this year than actually satirical. And I don't know, maybe just life has taken on such a pallor of disaster and humor.
Just the Republican Party.
It's ridiculous.
No, what it is, this has got to be what it is. And because they are geniuses over at The Onion, I believe this 100%, they have managed to sneak their writers into like the staff of political planners and analysts
they're infiltrating so
that they can go, hey guys, release this and we'll make it happen in like a month, and then it does, and they look like miracle workers because they are miracle workers.
Here, let's let the professional mop this one up. Here Rachel
made such a big deal with, you know, you forgot Poland. Well, you know what, everybody forgot Hungary. Hungria? The politically strategy to match the military strategy. Everybody forgot Hungria. But this is the man who is about to run Congress. This is the man who is about to become Speaker of the House, barring something very unforeseen. And honestly, I'm sorry, just one more. I think this is important to bring home the gravity of this situation, that Kevin McCarthy is about to get this close to the American presidency. Just one more. We have one more.
What?
It had to be hundreds of thousands of their grandchildren to make that decision. We don't have the same as difficult decision, but this White House is managing the decline and putting us and tough decisions for the future.
The decline in putting us in tough decisions for the future. Peanut butter jelly. Banana, banana.
Okay, okay, wait,
all
wait.
While
okay.
Keeping the place of the band on America and Hungria.
She's so pissed about Hungria.
She is. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you can't even get that right. At least that's a country. I mean, and it's also a word that happens around mealtime. You get hungry.
I just okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, when you get to like a website, you're searching, maybe it's like eBay.
Okay.
And there are things that are in another language, and the little Google button comes up, and it's like, you want to translate this?
Oh,
and Google
this
translate.
Is a bad Google Translate.
This is English.
Like, I feel like he wrote it in text speak, gave it to someone who doesn't speak English, who
he outsourced it to a Filipino.
You know, like, yeah, somebody in some other country wrote it in their language, and then they mailed it in their language to somebody else who ran it through Google Translate, handed him a cue card, and walked the hell away.
I bet if we actually, put this back into a translator to another language and read it, it would sound perfect. It would make all the sense in the world, except for the Hungria part. That's never going to make any sense.
I feel like if you cannot identify a country on a map, you have no right saying its name.
That he says that he's been to.
Yeah.
I don't.
That's
he can't have
ticker.
Been there. It's not there. So
he can't have been to Hungria because it doesn't exist.
Right.
And
yeah.
It never did.
I don't think that he tied his own tie. I'm pretty sure that he didn't. It must be a clip-on. I'm just not sure.
I can't. I have a hard time believing he's gotten as far as he has. I feel like he hasn't been asked to do much more than sign his name on things or stamp his name on things, because one who talks to himself and is recorded would know that this is not how words work.
I know. I know. Yeah. This apparently has just never, ever, ever been screened properly.
I feel like he has never. I feel like maybe all of his election stuff was just like the slideshows that have a voiceover, and he's never actually had to do anything.
I wonder if he's mastered the art of having the earpiece and just immediately parroting anything that comes out of the earpiece. And he had good speechwriters before, and he had somebody doing the whole Cyrano de Bergerac thing. And he was just being whispered the right things to say. And now he's been put into a position where he actually has to think for himself. And he wrote it all down. And now that it's coming out of his mouth again, it makes no sense.
He probably wrote it in shorthand with bad handwriting and figured that was good enough.
No, he's not clever enough for that. He obviously wrote it in big block letters like kindergarten.
It's in crayon.
In crayon. With the giant lines with the dotted line in the middle so you can do your letters the right size.
That's right, with the little drop so that you make sure that yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I think that we have other articles, but we've gone on for an hour now. Of just what the headlines were going to be. So I think at the very least this was a good stopping point. So we'll go back and we'll maybe hit some of these other ones another time. But for right now, I think that we need to have a little break, and then we'll get into the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Are you annoyed by misinformation spreading like crazy, and you want to stop the flood of nonsense coming from all directions? Go to Wikipedia, as do all those millions out there. Did you know there's an edit button on all Wikipedia articles? Why don't you go and hit that button to start making the world's largest online encyclopedia a more reliable source of information? If you're specifically interested in skeptical topics, come and join us at Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia, an international endeavor to change the world for the better, word by word. There are many ways you can contribute. You just need to start. You speak several languages? All the more reason to join us. We provide training and all the help you need. If you want to make a change, there's a nice community waiting for you out there. Contact us at gsowteam@gmail.com. Visit our website, that's gorillaskeptics.com, or check out the Gorilla Skepticism on Wikipedia Facebook page.
Alrighty, into the good. I had to move some things around because there's some things that we absolutely need to talk about. And one of them is that the Supreme Court of Canada has ruled that doctor-assisted suicide is okay and should be allowed for everyone in Canada. Mike, you had strong feelings on this one.
I feel strongly about things, and this is one of those things that I feel strongly about, especially when it comes to American politics and the hypocrisy that is the Life is Sacred movement, because as we've established with the whole abortion debacle, they don't care about the sanctity of life. They care about making women slaves to pump out babies for them, and this is a similar – we're on a similar vein here in which you don't actually value the sanctity of life. You just value people doing what you think is right. And as someone who is in chronic pain, I have certainly considered the possibility of getting rid of this chronic pain in my existence because it sucks. And I don't want to live through it. And I'm on the low end of the chronic pain and suffering scale. I've just got migraines. There are people who are in much worse circumstances than I am that are, battling cancers and chemo, which is basically pumping poison into your body and all sorts of horrible things that happen as your body starts to degrade. And somehow it is a requirement by law that these people have to be kept alive as long as possible and kept suffering. And that's all you're doing in this circumstance. You are torturing these people by taking away their right to end their own suffering. And that makes you evil.
Yeah.
Pure evil. There is no other way to put that. You are torturing people because you don't agree with their decisions. Well, guess what? It's not your fucking life. You don't get to make that decision. And so now Canada has joined a very short list of countries who now allow people who are in these kinds of horrible situations to terminate their own life without judgment. And that's important because the right to live is a thing that we have in this country. You have the right to life. The fucking anti-abortion people love to spout this right to live thing all the goddamn time. But when someone has decided that they're done living, that, I'm done. I've been here long enough. You immediately make it a crime. It's not just frowned upon. It's a crime to end your own life.
Yeah,
which is bullshit. Because that's the ultimate in the sanctity of life. That's the ultimate in personal autonomy, choosing not to live anymore. It's absolute fucking garbage.
I have not necessarily opposing views, but I have caveats to your view in that I am someone who suffers from chronic depression and bipolar disorder. And I recently just buried a 20-year-old boy, a family friend of mine. He's the second person in 6 years that I have lost to suicide. And I do not believe that, which is ultimately going to come up, that everyone has the right to suicide. I will say, if you have no medical outlook where things are going to get better for your quality of life, such as cancer, kidney failure, debilitating diabetes. I know some people who get to a certain age with spina bifida beg for the right to see a doctor, that's okay. Because I've always had the argument that if you let us put an animal to sleep because the treatment will be more painful than the ailment, then you should extend the same courtesy to people. But you do not put down a dog or a cat or a person because they can get better. It's yes, when this, getting better is, not, is a horrible
this
thing.
This is not a circumstance in which, you know, other people are making the decision for this individual. This is an individual saying, I don't want to live anymore. Help me do this in a way that's not going to horrifically maim me if it goes wrong. Because it I get what you're saying. I am also suicidally depressed. I've got a big shiny piece of paper from the U.S. military saying this is why you can't be in the military anymore. I get that. But it's still a matter of bodily autonomy. Yes, things can get better in some circumstances, but ultimately it's an individual choice how they want to live and the choices they want to make. Now, everyone out there who is struggling with suicide should consider not and should seek every possible opportunity to avoid that because life can get better in many circumstances.
Yeah.
And you should try it. As bad as you feel, it can get better. 5 years ago, I wanted to die. Now I'm happily married. You know, it's these things happen. Yeah. But ultimately, it comes down to it's your life. It's your choice. People make choices we're not happy with. We're sad that they're gone. But it's their fucking life. That's what it boils down to.
Now, I'd like to first, let's look back at the article, and then we'll get back into some of our own semantics on it. Because for those of you that are just joining the show that have never witnessed this before, the first are just kind of, you know, headlines that we just, you know, randomly go over. But the last segments, the last half of the show is when we do a more deep dive on sometimes the good, sometimes the bad, sometimes the ugly. And sometimes those are a little bit more vague than they appear on the surface. This is ostensibly a good thing because it gives more rights to people and it allows people that are in chronic pain an out. It gives that ability for somebody that is still of sound mind, potentially at least, to have the choice to leave, to be done, to put everything in order and exit stage right, the right way. It was a unanimous ruling by the court in a sanctity of life passage into death bill here. In a brief, powerful opening paragraph, the court explained why it was creating a new constitutional right to autonomy over one's death in some circumstances. Those who are severely and irremediably suffering, whether physically or psychologically, quote, may be condemned to a life of severe and intolerable suffering by the government's absolute ban on assisted dying. A person facing this prospect has two options. She can take her own life prematurely, often by violent or dangerous means, or she can suffer until she dies from natural causes. The choice is cruel. The decision was signed by the court, which happens occasionally when the justices wish to lend their decisions extra weight. The 9 judges, who range in age from mid-50s to 74, dismissed the notion that competent adults cannot consent to their death. Quote, we do not agree that the existential formulation of the right to life requires an absolute prohibition on assistance in dying or that individuals cannot waive their right to life. This would create a duty to live, the ruling says. The court decision puts Canada in the company of a very small group of countries such as Belgium and the United States, the U.S. states, Washington and Oregon, that permit doctor-assisted death. So that kind of gives you the basics of why they said the way they did, and the fact that it was a unanimous decision across a large age range, and of older people as well. So it wasn't just young people that didn't have any skin in the game, you know, where they're not used to the ebb and flow of life. These are people that have seen it. In fact, they've risen to prominence. They're Supreme Court justices. They got some power to wield. They know the way life goes. You know, you don't get to be age 70 without losing people.
You don't get to be age 70 without suffering from time to time and knowing how shitty it can get.
Yeah. I don't care how powerful you've been. I don't care how big the silver spoon was in your mouth, you are still going to know suffering by that time. We all get sick. Yeah. We all lose people. We all have tragedy affect our lives in one way or another. The way that we deal with that, of course, is highly individual and very subjective. But they came to a unanimous ruling, and I think that speaks volumes. As to my own opinions on this, I think that in this world, we have all reached, just being a human, we have the ability to analyze our own lives. Dogs, probably not. Cats, probably not, though they certainly analyze us. There are very few other animals in nature that commit suicide, I think. I don't really know of any.
Cetaceans.
Cetaceans?
There are some circumstances in, like you said, cetaceans do it. Certain species of animal that mate for life, if their mate dies, they don't have anything to live for anymore. But, it's certainly rare.
Yeah, but in those cases, they don't really take their lives. They just kind of wither away and lose the purpose for life and die. Though we see that in some elderly couples, too, where one of them will pass away and the other follows suit rather quickly, no matter what their health condition was. And that's terribly sad. But, and that's basically they died of a broken heart kind of thing. It is bodily autonomy. I think that, if you've given it a lot of thought, then who am I to tell you no?
Yeah. If you are of sound enough mind,
yeah.
Because when you're in pain, your thought processes are impaired somewhat, but if you are in sound enough mind that you can reason the situation.
Yeah.
And say, this is the situation I'm in. These are my reasons for not wanting to be it anymore. And you are obviously, you are obviously not being coerced and you're cognizant of the gravity of the choice you're making. It's your fucking decision. It's your body. It's your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the sound mind thing is the key here. Because as someone who is in constant emotional pain because of the chemistry in my brain, mm-hmm. to try to pass a sound mind sort of test, I wouldn't be granted it. I doubt it. I doubt
you,
I would.
You wouldn't necessarily be granted it on a given day, but it doesn't matter with the exception of some severe forms of like schizophrenia and stuff, there are still days of lucidity. And if you were lucid on that day, and it can be established, you were lucid on that day and you're done, you made the choice. That's your choice.
I
still don't think it's a choice that you should make unless you are truly out of options, but it's still your fucking choice.
Well, I think that's why they worded it the way it was, so that this isn't an out for people who can get help. This is an out for people that no matter what help they have, and like it's being said in the chat room now, when you look at, especially in this country, the medical bills that come with being forced to live. Now, I'll say to everybody in the chat room, that's not the case in Canada.
No, it's not.
It's not the case in Canada, so that's not something that they really needed to worry about with this. But
maybe not medical bills, but there are devastating financial consequences that can happen regardless.
Oh, yeah.
So that can always be a crux to.
But from what I understand, up in Canada, the main barrier to treatment is time. You have to wait for your turn in line, and if you're going to wait so long that it's going to be – that the time in between is going to be unbearable, then, again, this is cruel. This is torture.
Yeah, but I think it depends on – with any of these cases, just the ability to have the option, just the option alone of knowing that, you know what, I can end this, that is a measure of control that people – need on occasion. You don't have to pull the trigger. You don't have to swallow the pill. You don't have to do any of that. But simply knowing that you can.
And
gives you power over your own life.
And it's no longer illegal, and therefore, you know, the government doesn't seize your property and your will is completely negated, because that's another thing that happens in this country.
Yeah.
That because it's a crime, anything that is based on your death, like life insurance or your will or inheritance or any of that stuff, it's thrown out the window because you committed a crime. It no longer counts anymore. And that's a load
penalized.
Of horseshit.
Yeah, the living are penalized for that choice.
I mean, I'll say that going back to, you know, what I was saying about suicide as we know it now, like not these medically necessary, like not the, for lack of a better term, and I'm sorry that it's insensitive, but the old Yeller type suicides where I'm old, I'm suffering. I'd like to go while I can still say that.
If you're faced with something like Alzheimer's.
You know, some people are fine living that way and they accept that. But for some, the dignity is not in lasting as long as you can, but in lasting as you remember yourself.
Right.
That separate. But the idea of suicidal young people, people who are mentally unhealthy, but not mentally debilitated long term or something like that. I think that having this option open, because suicide is contagious. That has been proven. When you know someone who commits suicide, you are something like, correct me on the percentages, but you're almost a fifth more likely to try it yourself when you reach a low point.
I don't know that statistic is as relevant as it seems.
Yeah, well, I have never heard any concrete study that establishes that there aren't like a million mitigating factors, because when they look at these things, they always these groups of people are always the groups of people that are already inclined to suicide anyway, people who are suffering from depression or other, you know, mental conditions.
It's kind of one of those you're shown the door, like, I didn't even know I could do that.
Well, it's like the multiple divorce theory.
Theory has been disproven though. It doesn't hold up statistically.
Go ahead and outline that theory for everyone.
Once you have one divorce, you're more likely to see divorce as an option in your next marriage, which is why you rarely see people who have only been divorced once.
Well, isn't that also kind of like the priming, our mental priming ability?
Yeah.
Where you just got a rental car for,
but,
you know,
but again, when you dig into that situation, serial divorcees are more likely to be serial divorcees because of existing personality traits, not because it simply happened. People who are, you know, when their personality is examined, are heavy on commitment, still get divorced, but they still exhaust every option before divorcing. Serial divorcers, that's the first thing, first sign of trouble. They walk out the door.
The first one is harder to do because it's an unknown variable.
Theory comes on. It's the idea of, I climb this mountain. I climb this one mountain. I can climb another mountain. I'm a mountain climber.
But the theory doesn't hold up because people are far more complex than that.
Yeah. You see, then what you end up with is something that in the IT world, it's security through obscurity. Simply not knowing is somehow the way to keep it out of the hands of the people.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying is this sense. Sort of law, if you have to pass a psych test to be able to see a doctor to assist in your suicide, I think that long term can help the mentally ill in not committing suicide. You know what I mean? Because if suddenly, you know, this is my option, it's a legal medical option. This obviously means that if I'm sure of this, I mention it to my doctor, and my doctor says, okay, well, you need to see a specialist before we can give you the paperwork to end your life. We're very sorry to see you go. And you see the specialist, and the specialist says, I cannot grant you this legal suicide because there are these options. I think that's a bigger light at the end of the tunnel, because you had the control, you tried it, and then you were given more options than.
Yeah, I don't think none of these programs that are ever mentioned, including the ones that are in Washington and Oregon, none of these are just a, go get a prescription for the pill and take it out. You
because
have
that's
to,
not that's not what actually happened. It's like
You have to go through proper.
This is a weird analogy to draw, but it is like abortion and Planned Parenthood. You go to abortion with an unplanned pregnancy; they will exhaust every option possible before doing the abortion because abortions have negative consequences. The same thing would happen here. The doctor is going to exhaust every option that is reasonable before resorting to that.
It ends up being a simple concept. It's informed consent. You have to know all the options before you can take one. So if you're considering it, basically that you would this would take the shame of having these thoughts away. You would then go to your doctor. You would say, I am having these thoughts and I would like to pursue these thoughts. What's next for me?
And, well, what's next is they break down all those thoughts in an open and unjudgmental discussion because, oh my God, is talking about suicide with a medical health professional fucking judgmental as shit in the current climate?
Yeah.
Oh my God, you feel about this big at the end of that conversation and it just makes you want to do it more.
I've only had one.
And take them with you.
I've had exactly two positive or not – horribly negative dehumanizing experiences with discussing this sort of thing. And the one – my most recent one to get my new medication because I believe that that helps me a lot. The nurse practitioner was really chill about it. Like he saw my psych test and he goes, oh, okay. Well, it says here that you have these thoughts. And I'm like, yeah, I do. And it sucks. And he's like, well, we're gonna have some talks and we're gonna try to fix it. And it's not gonna go away, but I'm gonna try and help cope because this is real sad. And he said it just like that, and it made it so much better. Because I'm sitting here like, you know, in my rain cloud thinking horrible, horrible thoughts. And he's like, ooh, okay, well, you're not alone in these thoughts, but we'd like to cut them down. And he treated it the same way that you would saying something like, I've got this infected finger that won't get better. I was like, oh, okay, well, let's see what we can do to take out that infection. And I think that this kind of medically sanctioned assisted suicide would bring that attitude to people more, like, you know, I'd like to apply for this. Okay, oh God, why do you want to apply for this? Let's run some tests. Let's see if we can help you before this.
Yeah.
Because it's like getting an amputation. You can't take it back.
Yeah. And you know, but I mean, this is also, we're also getting into that territory that we see all the time in like drug and alcohol arguments, which is another thing that has been proven to be fucking true. When you take the taboo away, it stops being as big a deal because this is a human psychology thing. When you say one group of things is permitted and the other is not permitted, you don't cross that line of permission when you're considering, you know, your options. Yes. You're either on one side of the line or the other. So when you're thinking about suicide, all you're thinking about is suicide because it's in the taboo area and there are no other options. As soon as you tear that taboo away, it's lined up with all the other options that you have.
Now –
and
this
that's
is,
how human psychology works. We organize things into blocks.
Okay. Here's where we have to put our disclaimer out, okay? None of us are trained professionals. We are not counselors. We do not have degrees in this. We are simply people that have been on our own journeys. I've been through medical depression as well. You know, so we've all got some stock in this. But that doesn't mean that anything that we say should be used as medical advice or advice in, well, either keeping your life or taking your life. We are not here for that, okay? But this, I have two numbers for you, okay? There is, of course, the ubiquitous National Suicide Prevention Hotline, and you can call that at 1-800-273-8255. And if you don't want to talk, you can go out to their website at suicidepreventionlifeline.org, all one word. If you've tried them and you don't like them, okay, get a second opinion. There's another one that you might have heard of called the Trevor Project. And it's not just suicide that the Trevor Project helps with. It's also about people that are coming out as bi, transgender, anything.
Mo guy.
You know, all of these. And you can give them a call. 1-866-488-7386. And you can get to them at thetrevorproject.org. Okay? Lots of resources out there. And they're there 24/7. You can also text them. You can chat with them online. They are trained to provide non-judgmental services to help you figure out what's going on.
Other resources that you can look at. You can look at the It Gets Better Project.
Yes.
And they have a lot of resources on their website. I know a lot of people who deal with depression also have anxiety, and calling may not be an option for you. But It Gets Better Project, To Write Love on Her Arms and Always Keep Fighting, you can look those up. And they all have good resources, good support, access to professionals, or a way that you can get them. I know for a fact that several of these resources that we've mentioned have international help as well.
Yes.
So if you are in Canada and Mexico and Europe, South America, Africa, Asia, Australia, whatever, chances are they have at least one or two resources for you abroad.
As far as the It Gets Better Project, it's itgetsbetter.org. I don't see a phone number for them, but they have tons and tons of videos and articles and everything that it's a fantastic resource, and they are intimately involved with the Trevor Project as well. So again, those numbers, should you be at all concerned about this kind of line of questioning, okay? A, you know, we can't take responsibility for you, but we're human beings, and you know, you could reach out to the show even if you absolutely had to. If you needed somebody to talk to, I'll do that. I'll talk to you. I will probably then send you over to these numbers at 1-800-273-8255 for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, or I'll send you over to the Trevor Project at 1-866-488-7386. But you know, there are options, and I would absolutely hate to see anybody do a very permanent solution to a temporary problem. And there's an awful lot of temporary in life. The one thing that we can always count on is change. So just look at the weather. It changes too. So with that, and that was the good segment. Jeez, where are we going with this? Anyway, let's move.
The good is bodily autonomy in Canada.
Yes, the good was bodily autonomy in Canada. But obviously there's a great breadth of baggage to that conversation. To carry on with the good, Raw Story had an article that Pope Francis hung out privately with a couple gay friends before accidentally shaking hands with Kim Davis. I thought this was an important thing to at least bring to the table, because we've been discussing Kim Davis for the last several weeks now, and she has really been stretching that 15 minutes of fame a little bit too long. And many articles have come out where, you know, Pope Francis was supporting her in her decisions and really coming in on her side. And it appears that that's not exactly the case, but nope. A lot of spin doctoring, which is rather popular on the right side.
The thing that gets me about this one is that the news that, you know, Pope Francis is a supporter of Kim Davis came from the chronic liars over at Fox News. The conservative news pundits put this out, and people have jumped all over this as an excuse to, you know, to tear apart everything, every positive thing the Pope did, because he did some positive stuff. Now, I am not saying that the Pope is by any means a superhero, and the Vatican and the Catholic Church is still on the evil side of the spectrum as far as organizations go, because, you know, there's a lot of things that he's still doing wrong, like like being anti-abortion and being against birth control and all that stuff. But this is one of those things where people are jumping on all over this bandwagon of there's no way this press release is true, he knew exactly what was going on, blah, 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 as if he has absolute control over every facet of the organization. We know that's not true because of the number of times he's gone and made a public statement and the rest of the Vatican has been like, no, 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 we don't believe in that at all. So obviously yeah. They are not a united front. And yes, it is possible that she could have gotten in there without his explicit approval. They sell tickets to see the Pope in some of his appearances. They sell tickets to see the Pope. You can get in there without him knowing ahead of time who he's going to talk to.
We have congressmen that steal his water glass later. I mean, so, things happen.
Yeah, so people just fucking show up to things, or they know a guy who gets them in, or he expects one person to be there and someone else gets shoehorned instead, because he is not this all-powerful monolithic entity.
Right.
He does not have total control.
And since Kim Davis has become this little conservative icon...
Of course, they fucking shoehorned her in there.
Yeah.
As the person who was raised Catholic, still not Catholic, I won't say that Catholic is evil. I will say that government, as we know it in the modern day, tends to be more on the evil side. And let us not forget that the Pope is the president of a country.
Yes.
It is a wee country, and the rest of his government, of his government is constantly facepalming at the things he does in the name of this country.
It's like, where do we know that happens? Oh, right, here in America, where the entirety of the government is trying to stop the president from doing his thing.
so you have to remember he is the king or the president, however that works. Yeah. On account of, he's Jesus Christ's
the Holy
best
See.
Friend. He's the king. He's got a throne, okay? He's got a king mobile. Pope is Catholic king. So
pretty much.
So what I liked about the Vatican statement is it was the most diplomatic, government-wise, diplomatic way of saying he was real grossed out that he touched her.
Yeah.
He shook her hand. He gives everybody a handshake and a kiss on the forehead because he's everybody's holy grandpa. And like everybody's grandpa, there's a lot of things that you're like, oh, gee, grandpa. And then there's a lot of things you're like, oh, gee, grandpa. And when he realized that Kim Davis was there, he had his other government buddies for the government of the city state of the Vatican issue a statement: we did not mean to do that. Gross. Sick. Ew. Like, we got the Kim Davis cooties.
That's awesome.
Wow. And it also speaks to Kim Davis's crazy amount of the delusion of her self-importance, because she was in a group of people. For everyone who doesn't know, she was not actually – it's not a one-on-one. Mm-hmm. It was a group of people. And the Pope gives a little Popey speech, and then he does a meet and greet like every politician ever.
And he does this in every country he goes to.
Yeah. Like every traveling dignitary of every country ever.
Oh, but more so. But more so. He definitely always gets down and presses the flesh.
Because, he speaks for anybody who's part of the spiritual part of his spiritual domain. And then he gave the don't give up faith in your faith speech. And Kim Davis went straight to her buddies at Fox News and was like, the Pope told me not to give up faith on my struggle. No, bitch. Like, he was giving
generic Pope speech 27A. That's what he's giving.
There was a fucking teleprompter, and you can't tell me otherwise, because the man barely speaks English.
Oh.
He speaks Spanish and Italian, and he knows enough Latin because he was before Vatican II happened.
Yeah,
what he's got. His English is not great. He did not go, hey, you, Kim Davis, in this perfectly American accent of mine. I appreciate what you were doing, spreading hate in the name of Jesus. And don't give up because, oh my gee golly gosh, is this what Jesus Christ wants? No. He said a speech.
I would
probably, probably with a translator.
I would like to go ahead and
kind of channel the wisdom of the Pope, of the Holy See right now, and I'm going to give you your horoscope, okay? I don't know what in the star sign you happen to be, so I'm picking one at random. Let's see if it matches you. Have you been thinking about changing jobs or taking up a new profession? If you have, now is the time to lay the groundwork. If you haven't considered it, a new opportunity may take you by surprise. You may go from a behind-the-scenes career like banking to a very public profession like acting. Don't hesitate because of insecurity. If you like what's happening, go for it.
Did the Pope say that?
No.
But it sounds like the kind of thing the Pope would say.
It is a random horoscope from horoscope.com.
This is the kind of speech that he gives. Like I said, it's random Pope speech 27A. Yeah. You know, be strong in your faith, yada yada yada. Go forth, be fruitful and multiply. All that crap that the church always says.
Except new Pope says don't go at it like bunnies.
But you know what I mean? It's a formula. It's formulaic. The only person that he personally invited there that he spoke to privately was an old friend who was a student of his back in Argentina, who is, by the way, gay.
That's it. Yep.
And brought his partner with him.
Yes.
And as soon as all this nonsense went up from Kim Davis, this guy came forward and said, no, 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 no. I am actually friends with the Pope. He's totally cool. You're an asshole.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that one of the things that I like about New Pope is that he is not pretending like he didn't have a life pre-Pope.
Right.
And he's like, no, I mean, I know it says in one of the Bibles, like, don't do the thing, but it didn't make God's top 10 list. So anyway, here's my BFF and his husband. Like, like he can't
it
get married
make
to my
God's
church.
Top 10 list. I like that.
Like, that's my way of countering every time someone's like, oh, being gay is a sin. Bisexuality is a sin. Did it make the top 10 list? No, shut up.
Yeah.
I love
it. Didn't make the top 10 list, and no, you can't quote the five that got broken, because that don't fucking count. If you don't know the rules, you can't break them. That's bullshit.
You know, it's... Love it. But getting divorced in adultery made the top 10 list. Looking at you, Trump.
Ba-da-bum!
Oh, wow. It's so fantastic. So, with that, I think that we've definitely given her yet more time. So let's avoid that. Let's move right along.
Hi, O'Reilly Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye.
Okay, so the internet is a weird and strange place, okay?
It sure is.
That's the truth.
Truest thing we've said tonight.
Exactly. So I kind of came up with a little thing. People are strange when you're a stranger. It's not exactly like The Doors, but it is a strange idea. Bad, maybe strange, very yes. This is a new app that's going to be coming out called People, P-E-E-P-L-E. So peeping on people kind of thing. And it's you rate people. You basically like upvote them. It's kind of like Hot or Not, but way more personal and creepy. And it never goes away. However, there is a way out. If you never, ever go look at the thing, you never sign in, you never consent to their rules or anything like that, negative votes are never registered to you because you aren't there to contest them.
Yeah.
So
it does have this thing where if someone says something negative at you, you can make a counterpoint.
Yes.
Which is good.
But in order to counterpoint it, you have to be part of the system.
Yeah.
In order to go through the arbitration process. Otherwise, it just sits in a holding bin and never gets posted. So the moral of the story here is ignore people.
Yeah, just don't sign up for it.
Just ignore it, and you won't have any hassle.
Like, I get the concept behind it.
Yeah.
I understand, because we've had this discussion before about how there is no expectation of privacy, how that's how, you know, you leave records in the world and you shouldn't get to erase them just because you don't like what they say about you. It's the same argument that I have in things like, for example, malpractice cases, where if a malpractice case goes to court, you're not allowed to tell the jury how many times he's been sued for malpractice and how many times that he's been convicted for it, which I think is a load of garbage. If you've got a track record, that's not prejudicial. That's your fucking track record. So on the surface, I get this concept. But on the other hand, the world is full of terrible people who are going to abuse this system with all the power that they possess. So...
Look at the chat room.
Right? Yeah. So there is the negative aspect to it, obviously. But, you know, I'm a positive person. You know, I like to look at the bright side of things. I like to be optimistic about life and everything. And I could see where a system like this, if it was managed properly, where you could upvote or downvote people, or, you know, rate your experience with them. I think if enough of them were there, it would give a more accurate reputation score of a person. And there are people out there that, boy, you know, you really kind of wish you knew what
you knew ahead of time.
Yeah. And it is kind of like wearing, you know, the little, this is my warning label.
Scarlet letter.
No, not a scarlet letter. Not always a scarlet letter. How about that? Not always.
Well,
occasionally those people that are going to, you know, you get the reputation.
Well, that's, here's the thing.
Your reputation precedes you. It happens.
Me now versus me 10 years ago, other than the cartoons that we watch, me now and me then,
yeah,
are completely different human beings.
Right.
I treat people completely different now than I did then, because people evolve. It's a great thing about being a sentient creature. Not everyone evolves all the way. Some people evolve much slower or not at all. But still,
people do change.
People do change.
Some people make very bad first impressions.
Well, you know, and the fact that this is essentially Angie's List for human beings, I'm funny looking. I got a few friends that are funny looking. That's going to end up in our reviews. That we're funny looking. So if you're insecure, but still trying to be yourself, but you don't conform, these sort of rating things are very damaging, especially when you think about people with body dysmorphia issues.
Yeah.
Or you think about people who work in a freak show, like friggin' Little Bear. Like, she's a great person. She's very outspoken.
What if...
she's a bearded lady.
Well, I wouldn't know that. What if a lot of the ratings happen sight unseen? You don't know who the person is. You're simply rating your interaction with them, like a telemarketer or someone. Someone that calls you, gives you excellent customer service over the phone. Are you going to rate them high? Are you going to rate them low? You don't know what they look like.
But this is, you know, you can, as long as you have I don't know what it is, but you need to have a key. You need to have a key piece of personal information about them to rate them. I don't remember what it is, but it's something on there. It's something that, you know, it's something that you probably can't get just anywhere. Like, you really have to dig for it if you want it.
I say that this is too early. This is way alpha level. Not ready for prime time. This is going to be damaging this thing.
Like I said, there we keep going back and forth on good things, bad things about this, because there are certainly people in my life that there is one in particular person who everyone here knows, but I'm not going to say who it is on the air, because then I'll get no end of shit from the people who still like her for no reason, who is a terrible fucking person. And this one group of people who has only ever seen her be nice and saccharine sweet because she's that kind of manipulative bitch, love her to death and think that I am a horrible person for judging her.
Okay.
Whereas there's this mountain of people on the other side who all met her did not listen to me when I warned them she was a terrible person, and now all hate her. And having this record, this record of people who like her on one side and people who hate her on the other, would just be glorious. See, for this particular argument that I'm having with these people over here who won't shut up about how horrible a person I am. But even though there are some pros here, again, the world is full of terrible people, and the internet is a terrible place to be anonymously judging people. Look at YouTube comments. Look at 4chan. There is no way that this can go well.
Are you anonymous in your rating of people? I don't think you can be anonymous when you're rating someone.
You know what?
But that
because
also causes
it's because
more
it's a
problems.
Construct in cyberspace, people will find a way.
Well, like the thing is, on either end, the risk for dangerous marginalization on something like this is strong because you know what? Today, not anonymously, on Facebook, someone dear to me reposted something from another person's profile. I know this person. This person has victimized people very close to me. And I just put in the comments right away, so-and-so's a rapist. That's it. Yeah. This person, the person you repost this from, that's a rapist. And I own it because I know that this is true. But the person in question has an enormous fan following. And I know that in spreading this unpopular opinion about him, I could put myself in danger eventually. And when something
slanderous, liable, yeah.
Is something as widespread as you can rape people and it stays forever, for going against the status quo on how someone is rated, that can put you in danger. I've seen it on a small scale on some social networking sites, like vampirefreaks.com. I've been kicked off 4 times. Why? Because people who are not 10s did not get 10s from me. On the like little rate thing.
Really?
Yeah. I rated a bunch of people who were 4s. And because I was being unkind and lowering their scores, I was kicked off. Hmm. Now imagine if this is something that has your face and even if you leave it, it's always there.
Well, here it is. To review someone, you must be 21 years old. And have or at least, you know, labeled as 21 in the system, and have an established Facebook account, and you must make the reviews under your real name.
You see, that's all. That's very dangerous because I think about some international laws that I know about. Like there are some countries where you have to petition to be able to file a rape charge as a victim.
Or you have to have like a witness. Otherwise, it's not valid. Yeah.
So if the person who assaults you is famous or well-liked and you post it on this thing, they can come after you, or the people who support them can come after you. And I don't know about you guys, but when I was growing up, there was a singer, Selena. She was killed by the head of her fan club.
Yeah.
And as a Hispanic American, this was a really big deal for Hispanic Americans. And it kind of bred this fear of these sort of possessive people. And if you use your Facebook, and with Facebook's deeply detrimental real name rules that keep coming up, this is a great way to open yourself up to a lot of damage.
You must also affirm that you know something. The person in one of 3 categories, personal, professional, or romantic, to add them to the database to add someone to the database who has not been reviewed before. You must have that person's cell phone number. The app was originally supposed to scrape names automatically from Facebook, but the API would not allow it. Positive ratings post immediately. Negative ratings are queued in a private inbox for 48 hours in case of disputes. If you have registered for the site and thus
If you haven't registered for the site and thus cannot contest those negative ratings, your profile only shows positive reviews. If you haven't registered for the site, your profile only shows positive reviews. As in, you don't have a choice. You're going to be on there anyway.
This alone opens it up for abuse.
Yeah.
That someone can intentionally not sign up and just, you know, use friends or a fan base following to upvote themselves to make themselves look good mm-hmm. when they are in fact terrible people.
Yeah.
This is a horrible idea. Facebook is bad enough.
And it's worse than just, you know, bad people setting up fake profiles or whatever, or just not going in and doing all of these things. This opens up for all of your positive reviews being crass sexual comments. This is a new level. Unsolicited
people have
public sexualization.
People has outlawed a laundry list of bad behaviors, including profanity, sexism, and mention of private health conditions.
I cannot imagine the sheer volume of, you know, editing that's going to have to take place. They're going to have a huge staff of people constantly checking all of these reviews to make sure that it doesn't violate terms of service. And it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
it's going to slip through.
Oh, this is a troll's wet dream.
Yeah, this is a terrible fucking idea. Whoever created this is obviously living in fucking Care Bear land.
No, or they're a horrible person who's trying to mask this. This screams revenge porn site runners.
Right?
Trying to find a new way to dick with people.
But it's one or the other. They're either living in a fantasy world or they're the fucking devil. There's no middle of the road here.
It's two female entrepreneurs.
I was just about to say something hideously sexist, and I'm going to take it back.
Cordray and McCullough. Those are the two ladies' last names. I don't know where this is going to go, but I imagine, like so many of these...
Obscurity?
Oh, let's see. There was an update. This story has been updated to remove a reference to people users being unable to remove inaccurate reviews. While People co-founder Julia Cordray told the Post in an interview that users would not be able to contest reviews after they went live, she later clarified by email that users can report anything they deem as inaccurate to the site. So, yeah, they're going to be inundated by complaints and all manner of things.
Yeah, it's going to be a constant he said, she said battle of... You know, people either are trying to protect their reputation because they're not bad people and they're being made to look bad, or people trying to sweep their sins under the rug because they want everyone to believe that they're perfect.
Well, not just that. Think again, you know, I brought up that, you know, there's a guy who is a rapist that is within my circle of influence. He has fans because he made a post that went viral. It made international news because he stood up for one good thing in his whole goddamn life.
Yeah.
And because of that, I know that he would be flooded with positive things. And the second that somebody is like, look, this is what happened.
You know this guy?
Yeah, you know, I've known this guy for a long time. He did this to me or my loved one, you know, in this setting. Don't believe this public facade. He can have it deleted.
Yeah.
Because look at what everyone else is saying.
Yeah.
It is a great way to marginalize already marginalized people, and that's really scary. And I think that these women are either ignorant or they were wronged by somebody in some petty way to the point where they want to ruin their lives.
This is an internet land grab is what it is, because Cordray is hyping it on YouTube where she's publishing a reality web series about the app's process. So this is all about creating a marketing feeding frenzy, basically. And, you know, anything like this, there is no true altruism on the internet. They are trying to make some money here.
Intrinsically, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But trying to pretend your idea is anything other than a horrific feeding frenzy is deplorable. I don't care that you're trying to make money. I care that you're creating something that is going to make terrible people do terrible things to people who don't deserve it.
Let's see. Creepy, toxic, gender hate in a prettier package. Lots of these words have been bandied about for this one. So
yep.
It's well, stay tuned. I'm sure that it will be on cell phones somewhere, and then we're going to have to consider whether or not we actually want to join so that we can dispute things and make our profiles go away. Like, okay, we have to join just so that we can opt out. And then, you know, because then you'd have to join in order to get part of like a class action lawsuit against them or something. You know,
the eventual class action lawsuit.
The eventual class action lawsuit. Yeah.
I was just about to say that because, like, Little Bear just said, you know, rating people feeds into the idea that people have a market value. And Michael has heard several times on my.
I think people do have a market value.
My argument. You know, my argument that I am not currency.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I raise this argument every time we talk about healthcare. You can't put a dollar value on a human life, and right. That's all that privatized healthcare does is said unless you can afford X amount of money, your life is worthless.
Well,
this is exactly the same thing.
It's,
yeah,
it's not quite like that. In fact, it's more insidious because since life has no dollar limit on it, you can charge anything you want for a pill.
Which is what we talked about last week.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I mean, this sounds like patriarchal and toxic is only the beginning of how truly twisted this is. This sounds like the horror movie version of Mean Girls. This sounds like the beginning of a suicide cult based on like late 80s slam books.
Wow.
That is like
it's fucking awful.
Like it's a terrifying thing.
It is,
and I hope these women are stupid and not evil.
Can't they be both? I think they're both. Why not
stupid
both?
And evil?
Yeah, why not
both? Porque no los dos.
Porque no los dos. No, but this is it's just I you know, like I said, on the surface This is not an unreasonable thing because I don't believe that people have the right to privacy. I do believe that you should be held accountable for what happens in your past, mm-hmm. as well as what you do now. But this you know, this structured system where everything has a point value and people are going to be competing for the higher numbers is just going to turn it into a fucking circus because we have this sort of system already in our society. People hear things about other people, your reputation precedes you, and people judge you based on how you have treated people they know. It's a very fluid, organic system that while it does have its problems, it's like our government. It works better than anything that's come before. This is just human nature. And I do think that despite the horribleness that is out there, more often than not, the truth wins out. Because when you have to face people, you're less likely
to
just completely overblow things. But as soon as you know, formalize it and put it in a fucking scrapbook, it becomes monstrous.
There is a website that does this already, and it's called Clout. KLOUT, and you end up with a clout score, which is basically kind of a reputation score across different social medias. So it's not just one, and it's how you interact and how many people like your posts and share your stuff and stuff like that. You end up being a tastemaker, things like this. So you end up with a clout score. It's basically a reputation kind of thing, but it is not directly interfaceable by anybody. Someone in particular cannot affect your rating unless they just ignore you or they interact with your stuff a lot. So it'll be interesting to see how the marketplace of ideas really runs with this and see whether or not people actually want to be a part of things like this. And I think I had a clout score of like 60 something or other, which is fairly high actually, based on just social interaction because I share an awful lot of things and obviously I have a podcast and things like that. So I'm everywhere. So good luck, people. Come on, beat my clout score.
No, thanks.
Yeah, I didn't think you really wanted it.
I don't really care that much.
Yeah, well, there's definitely that. And there's nothing wrong with not wanting to have any fame or any of that. But, you know, there's there's a little ego there, and it's nice to have every now and then.
See, and I'm the opposite. Like, something that I've been coined for saying, like, back in my hometown, often, because I have polarizing views on many things, as listeners will be have been figuring out the last few weeks.
No, no way.
I'm here to make a difference, not to be liked. And that's my mark on the world. I don't want you to like me. I want you to learn from me. If you end up liking me because of the way in which I am educating you, that's great. But if not, that's also great, because lions do not lose sleep over the opinions of sheep.
Yeah, it's that, but that is the thing that I think that's sort of the theme of this show. We don't care if we're liked, we just care that we get you to think, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I know that that my anger puts people off, and I know that I have unpopular opinions on things. I don't give a damn. I'm still going to shove them in your face and make you think about your own views. You know?
I mean, I think you're pretty likable, but I mean, I've known you for a while. I'm invested, and if I suddenly stop talking to you now, where would I hang out during the week?
Right?
Nice. I've ignored my clout score. It's only 37. Anyway.
Aw. Womp womp. That's an F.
Aw, too bad. Too bad. And with that, let's break over to a logical fallacy. This week's logical fallacy is bandwagon. You appealed to popularity or the fact that many people do something as an attempted form of validation. The flaw in this argument is that the popularity of an idea has absolutely no bearing on its validity. If it did, then the Earth would have made itself flat for most of history to accommodate this popular belief. Example, Seamus pointed a drunken finger at Sean and asked him to explain how many people could believe in leprechauns if they're only a silly old superstition. Sean, however, had a few too many Guinnesses and himself, and then fell off of his chair.
Aside from the fact that that was stereotypy,
super stereotypy.
Well, examples typically are stereotypy.
But you know, it's funny. At least about this particular stereotype, I've never met an Irishman who didn't just shrug their shoulders and say, "Yeah, we are that drunk." Well, like, just saying.
I've met Irish women who are like, "That's not how it is," but that's another story.
It's okay. My friends were drunk at the time.
My friends who live in Ireland are a special kind of people. But bandwagoning. It's so good. Anti-vaxxers looking at you.
Yeah, looking at you, you morons.
Just because you got a fucking club does not mean that you're right. Even a little bit.
Yeah, not even a little bit. And we have one more category.
Seriously, we're not done yet?
No, one more.
Oh, God.
We're into the ugly now. So you might have noticed that there was this little thing, another shooting, yet another shooting. It's not so good, obviously. In fact, that's why it's in, oh my gosh, the bad.
The ugly.
Yeah, the ugly. It's even worse than bad. It's ugly. The president came out and had some words to speak about it. I have since lost the link to his very to a truncated speech that was only like a minute. But he was visibly shaken and almost visibly shaking as he recounted how many of these he's had to address in the past. In just his presidency, there have been so many mass shootings
I've got some of his speech, and I will recite it for you. I cannot do it in his fantastic delivery, but I will give us his words on the subject because he said it so well.
Okay.
There has been another mass shooting in America. As I said just a few months ago, and I saw a few months before that, and I say each other one of these times, our thoughts and prayers are not enough. It does not capture the heartache and grief and anger that we feel, and it does nothing to prevent this carnage from being inflicted someplace else in America. It's fair to say anybody who does this has a sickness in their minds, regardless of what they think their motivations may be. But we are not the only country on earth that has people with mental illnesses that want to do harm to other people. We are the only advanced country on earth that sees these kinds of mass shootings every few months. Somehow this has become routine. The reporting is routine. My response here at this podium ends up being routine. We've become numb to this. It cannot be this easy for someone who wants to inflict harm on other people to get his or her hands on a gun. We need more guns, they'll argue. Fewer gun safety laws. Does anybody really believe that? How, with a straight face, can you make the argument that more guns will make us safer? We know that states with the most gun laws tend to have the fewest gun deaths. Somebody somewhere will comment, Obama politicized this issue. Well, this is something we should politicize. This is a political choice that we make to allow this to happen every few months in America. We are collectively answerable to those families who have lost their loved ones.
I certainly stand with the president on this. I mean, there's things that we could do, but we are politically hampered by the money from the NRA and the gun lobbies to not do them. There have been many, many charts that have come out indicating why gun control is necessary in just fairly simple numbers. I have one in front of me, which is a list of all the states in the U.S. with gun-related deaths per 100,000 in 2013. And then there's categories. Is a permit required to purchase a handgun? Are there universal background checks on handgun sales? Must handguns be registered or reported? Does some form of stand-your-ground law exist? How difficult is it, generally, to obtain a concealed carry permit? How difficult is it, generally, to carry an open carry permit? Is there a waiting period for handguns? Of all of the 50 states, Hawaii has the lowest number at 2.6 in per 100,000. And they have the strictest gun control policies. Yes, you have to have a permit. Yes, there are universal background checks. Yes, handguns must be registered or reported. No, there is no stand your ground law. How difficult is it to obtain a concealed or an open? Both difficult. And is there a waiting period for handguns? 14 days.
Yes.
That is the highest of all the 50 states. And they have the lowest. They have the strictest out of all of them.
I lived there for 3 years, and while I was in high school at the time and I did not follow the news nearly as much as I do now, I still never noticed on the local news that there had been a shooting. It never made the headlines, or at least any headlines that I noticed. Yeah. Granted, I was a high schooler and I was a bit distracted, but still, you absorb things just by you know, having your eyes and ears open. And, you know, my parents watched the news every day, so I got exposed to this. There was nothing there. Most of the stories that you heard about anything wonky that happened was some guy made too sharp a turn on the highway because the surf report was good and he crashed into another guy trying to go to North Shore.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
Now, there are some out there that are now going to say, but Hawaii has such a small population, so how can that be relevant? Okay, let's go to another low-population state, Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Alaska has a very low population. It also has the least restrictive gun policies of all. You do not have to have a permit to have a gun. There are no universal background checks. Handguns must not be registered. They do not have to be registered. There is a stand-your-ground law. No permit is required to conceal a weapon, and no permit is required to openly carry a weapon, and there is no waiting period whatsoever for handguns.
That sounds like my personal hell.
They have the highest of the percentages here, 19.8 per 100,000 gun-related deaths. So if you're just working by the metrics,
And Alaska is a low population state. And sure, there are bears and things that can kill you in nature. Certainly. That's fine and well and good, and go ahead and how about you go through the proper channels to go get a weapon, because you don't need a waiting... There's no need to not have a waiting period to get a gun.
Yeah.
You know you're going to Alaska. You know? And if you're born there, you're probably with parents that already have guns. You know? So, there's no reason that a more restrictive policy can't be put into place.
I also loved, and this came up about the same time that this was circulating, there was another graphic, and it was a density graph. It was the United States of America with little location markers of where all these mass shootings have happened since whenever they started tracking them. And it was only over the last couple of years, really. It's not a terribly long thing that they've been tracking this. Mm-hmm. All of the dots, all the hits, were basically in the Southeast. Like, there were some along the coasts and scattered here and there. You know, there's a little bit all over the country, but there's just this huge blob of red dots in the Bible Belt.
Yeah,
in the Carolinas and Georgia and Arkansas and Alabama and all that area of the country, where all the fucking gun nuts live. And it's like, this just proves our point that your argument is wrong, because you're all armed to the teeth and you're all dying by the very guns that you own. Now, I am not saying get rid of all guns. I will defend the right to own a firearm for self-defense purposes till my dying breath. But I don't give a damn how you feel about private gun ownership one way or the other, whether you should have it or should not have it. If you're going to have it, it needs to be fucking regulated. We need to know who has the guns, and we need to know those people can be trusted with guns.
Yeah. Now, in President Obama's address on the Oregon Community College shooting, he asked, have news organizations tally up the number of Americans who've been killed through terrorist attacks in the last decade and the number of Americans who've been killed by gun violence, and post those side by side on your news reports. He asked them to do that. Vox went ahead and did that. So deaths from terrorism and gun homicide from 2001 to 2011. Every year, there are more than 11,000. Some are even much higher. I think the highest one was 12,791 in 2006. But all of them are over 11,000 gun deaths in the United States. In 2001, yes, there were deaths due to terrorism. It didn't come close to the gun deaths. 2,689. Since then, there have been, in 2002, 25 killed by terrorism, 35 in 2003, 74 in 2004, 56, then 28, then 19, 33, 9, 15, and in 2011, 17. Those numbers are barely even registered. Yet, thanks to small actions like that, we have to take our shoes off and go through being manhandled at airports, where they've found, I think, under 5 people that were actually trying to do harm to others in airports. And yet, every year, more than 11,000 people have been killed. Straight up homicides, okay? Purposeful, not accidental. These are purposeful gun deaths every year. And it's not like a wavering line, you know, going up or, you know, going down. No, no, no. It's every year. That's an average. And that's staggering. It's scary. I don't have anybody here on this panel that's not going to agree with me. So we're all looking with kind of a stunned look on our face that this is the state of play.
I can only ever talk to my experiences, obviously, not being an expert on anything but myself and like snakes. But
she fucking loves snakes.
Okay.
I love me some snakes.
Good to know.
I will say that I was born in 1987, and because my youth was in the 90s and the early 2000s, homegrown terrorism is all I know. 9/11 happened. We all went through it. It's awful. But homegrown terrorism is all I grew up with. I grew up with Columbine, which this is very reminiscent of. I grew up with the Unabomber. I grew up with the Oklahoma City bombings. I grew up as a person of color in a poor neighborhood who was assumed and is still assumed to be inherently more dangerous should I have a firearm, hearing about nothing but middle and low class white men shooting people because of something that he picked up from a book or the internet, because he had a personal vendetta on an idea and took it out on human beings that he felt embodied this idea, whether it was corporate unfairness, misogyny, or being a neo-Nazi atheist like this guy and the Columbine kids. I have grown up, matured in this culture of white men get gun, white men get angry, white men kill a bunch of people. And it's a mental health issue, not a gun issue. There's an article circulating from months ago from one of the first shootings this year about how it's not a mental health issue. It's an entitlement and a gun regulation issue. Because more people are mentally ill than have ever hurt anybody. And these shooters always pass sight tests if they live. Always. There's been maybe two cases where they haven't.
And they've been confirmed to have a pervasive personality disorder.
Yeah, you know, they're not sick. They're broken and they are evil on a classic scale. Mm-hmm. But it is... It for me, all I can think about with this sort of thing is that it's less safe for anyone to go outside every time this happens. And it's so scary that this guy can jump he dropped out of the military. He got in with neo-Nazis, which it's not illegal to be in this country. And he went on a shooting rampage.
Which is ridiculous on its own, but, you know.
Yeah, you know, which is ridiculous on its own. And then for myself, all I can really think about is all these gun control laws are still set out to protect people like him.
Go ahead, Michael.
I obviously had – well, okay, I have two things to say. First of all, they keep trying to blame this on mental health and – saying that that's the issue that needs to be fixed. And yet, they don't try to fix the deplorable state of mental health care in this country. So, who the fuck are they fooling? They don't care. Just, you know, trying to redirect everyone's focus doesn't prove that you care. It just proves that you don't want people to attack your for-profit gun laws that don't help anybody.
It works the same way with the pro-life argument, you know.
Yeah, it's the exact same. Yeah, it's the exact same thing. You're not wanting to fix the mental health care problem. You just don't want people to be thinking about guns. That's all it is. But and that kind of segues into my next point. I also grew up in an era of, you know, these shootings. Ophelia and I are approximately the same age. And I obviously had a very different life experience because I was born white, thank God. I thank my lucky stars every day that I was born white because my life has been a lot easier. That's just – that's the way that the world is. It's terrible, but that's the way it is. But I was – my dad was in the military, so I moved around a lot. And I was exposed to guns very early on because my dad had one in the house. He had his service sidearm. I knew where it was. I knew not to touch it on pain of, you know, every punishment that could possibly be leveled upon me. And I was terrified of my old man, so I didn't go anywhere near it. But, you know, I was introduced to guns at an early age. I learned to fire on a bolt-action rifle at a Boy Scout outing. That was my first experience with a gun, you know. And it was just, this is a tool. This is what we use it for. Be careful with it. Respect it. And don't point it at other people, you know. That's all it was. But I, too, grew up in this environment where there were these shootings all over the schools, and every time it happened, people would get paranoid, and I got suspended one time because a teacher mistook some weird – I don't even remember what it was, but I had something in my hand that from across the room she vaguely interpreted as gun-shaped, and I got suspended for a week. And there was absolutely nothing going on. And when we went to the principal's office over this, he examined this and basically said, there's nothing here, but we're going to suspend you anyway because it'll look good, which is ridiculous. But when I was a kid, I was really big. I was, and still am, really, really big into video games. And I remember that every time one of these shootings happened, it was blamed on video games. The evils of video games. That was the scapegoat then. Well, and time went on proved that to be bullshit.
Yeah. What year were you born, Michael?
1986.
You were born in 86. So I'm the old fogey here. I was born in 1978. Long ago. No, I'm kidding.
In the before time.
In the before time.
Back when the earth was cooling. Yes. Andy had feelings.
Back when back when the internet was still just a young pup. With the FidoNet and all that. Actually, that works. Anyway. The big boogeyman that we had was Dungeons and Dragons. Because video games weren't really popular yet. You still had to go, you know, load them off a 5 1/4 floppy. So it wasn't really something that was possible. What you going to blame? Pac-Man? Yeah, right. That's not going to work.
Yeah, it wasn't until the Doom era came around that they had their ammunition.
Yeah. It's like, you going to blame Tommy with the pinball wizard? No, that's not going to happen. But yeah, the Dungeons and Dragons, oh, well, you're obviously allowing demons to come in and all sorts of things, you know, dark demonic properties and all that. And that's also when the religious right started to take over Washington and the rest of everything.
And the religious right in the Middle East started to do what they do now.
Yeah. So... it was definitely a shift. I obviously do not blame Dungeons and Dragons for this shift in political power and influence. But yeah, it has continued to get worse. I was a trench coat wearing, high schooler. But mostly it was just because I was already on the outside. I was already, you know, one of the intelligent people that, you know, hung around with all the honors and AP students and, you know, always in the theater. So, of course, I'm wearing black. Yeah. But I also wore a top hat and walked around with a stage cane sometimes and was tossing, you know, cards into my hat and things like that during economics class, telling them that they were wrong.
What a beautiful time to be alive.
It was a wonderful time to be alive, yes. And certainly, because of just the way I was, I had a relationship with the school administrators where... No, I did not get suspended, but they did take me aside and say, you know, maybe you guys ought to stop wearing the coats for a little while. But that's the difference between growing up where I did and the time that I did and, well, what we have now, which is shootings everywhere. I certainly wouldn't have been allowed to get away with the things that I did get away with back in high school.
I just, for me, like, I remember, Sandy Hook happened on my birthday.
I'm sorry.
Sandy Hook happened on my birthday. And there was a part, Sandy Hook happened on my birthday. It was the anniversary of my sister's death. And there was another private but family tragedy all in the same evening.
I'm sorry.
And all I can remember is somebody had posted online, you know, it's one of those like Twitter things that goes viral sort of situations. And, you know, some racist white guy on Twitter said something about, you know, because, you know, gun control comes up with all this. And somebody had brought up, you know, stand your ground stuff. Like, if people had stood their ground and teachers had been allowed to have guns, this wouldn't have happened. And this guy had posted something like, you know, I just wish that, you know, something like, I wish that black people, you know, people are taking it away from whatever. And I wish that black people would just learn to obey the law. And it got all these big votes and everything. And then this girl who looked like a teenager retweeted the guy. And it was, you know, Sandy Hook. And she said, yeah, well, I wish white people would stop shooting up schools. I wish white men would stop shooting up schools. And the guy had nothing to say. And to best my knowledge, he shut down his Twitter because that's the reality of the situation is that it is scary to live in this kind of world. But the people who are perpetrating things are the ones who are being protected by the laws. Every time that something like this happens, if you notice, when it gets politicized, for some reason, the right wing wants to put in laws to protect the murderers, not the victims. And for me, that's terrifying because every time somebody gets shot and it makes the news, I'm either part of that demographic or somebody close to me is part of the demographic of the victim. But the shooter is almost always one demographic. And then the first thing that people who are in power and who are part of this demographic have to say is, well, you can't take away our guns. And all I can ever think is, because you're hoping to do it next time. Cause that's how it feels. And forgive me if I'm wrong on this, but that's how it feels when these gun control debates come in, is that all of these people on the far right, especially, are defending their right to go do this when they snap.
That's exactly what they're doing. They're just defending their right to kill whoever they want with impunity.
As the president said, we have spent over $1 trillion and passed countless laws and devoted entire agencies to preventing terrorist attacks on our soil, and rightfully so. And yet, we have a Congress that explicitly blocks us from even collecting data on how we could potentially reduce gun deaths. How can that be? It's money. It is being wielded by, in many cases, white, old, rich people that make an awful lot of money on selling death, both here and abroad, because guns are used the world over to make problems either larger or go away. That's my take on it. And I, like Michael, am a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. I was born with privilege. I was not necessarily born privileged. But, yes, I was born white in America in a nice suburban area.
Born white in America, that's all you really need to say. I mean, nowadays...
Well, you can be born white in a bad place, too.
Well, nowadays, we're in something of a different position because you're an atheist, which puts you down with everyone else in the you are evil category. You know, I have a mental illness, which means I'm a second-class citizen, and I'm also a heretic, which means, you know, I'm right there with you on the no longer welcome at church bandwagon. But, you know, so we've had some perspective. but we still do have the advantage of having white skin.
Yeah, it does certainly mitigate a lot of that problem.
Yeah.
Because, hey, look, we can actually say these things, and we say them in public.
Sure as hell going to do it.
A lot of people sure as hell can't do that. So it is up to us that are of that slightly privileged set that yet still have plenty of the baggage of not being in the privileged sect to make it as public as possible that, yes, I'm an atheist. Do you have a problem with that? Yes, I exist. I have the audacity to exist and be in your face about the whole thing. Would you like to ask me a question? I'm real. You can get to know me, have a cup of coffee with me, and we'll talk, and we'll see eye to eye on many, many things, and not eye to eye on maybe fewer things.
On quite a bit, but, yeah. You know. And I'm over here with the, I'm mentally ill, and I'm mentally ill, and I am not violent because I'm mentally ill. I am wanting to be violent because you're blaming violence on mental illness.
Yep.
You know, that's where this comes from. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You keep insulting us long enough, eventually we're going to snap.
Well, that's the thing with the proper term for that is ableist terms. When ableism comes into it, which is all this mental illness shit is, when they talk about it as far as shooters go, is they want you to pity somebody that they have worked so hard to make a pariah by making everybody who does something part of that.
Yeah.
You know, when a white guy decides he hates something enough that he's going to go and shoot up everything, he is mentally ill. He was a good kid, but he was a loner. He
fell in with the wrong crowd. Well, you know, he found drugs and just couldn't get out of it.
But,
oh, yeah, there's lots of these stories. It's like a script.
And then a woman does it. She was crazy. Regardless of her color, she was crazy. Not mentally ill. Crazy.
She was just crazy.
Hispanic person, a Hispanic male does it. A Hispanic female does it. She's crazy. She's a girl. Girl trumps everything. A Hispanic person does it. Was it an immigration issue? Was he a drug dealer? Was she on drugs? Was it a prostitution ring gone wrong?
Ophelia, you need to stop. They're going to start sending the black helicopters after you. You are giving away all of their secrets. You need to stop giving the playbook away.
A black man does it. Gang violence. Wanted to be a thug. Somebody of Middle Eastern or indeterminate.
I hear the helicopter.
Indeterminate race.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're actually Arabic. If you're brown, they automatically assume you're a Muslim and it's about the jihad.
Right.
You know, it was religious extremism. However, you know, a Christian guy, a self-described Christian guy, kills a bunch of women and a bunch of men he thinks is more handsome than him. And he fell in with a wrong crowd. Red pills aren't that bad. He was just pretty bad. Really, because...
Red pills aren't that bad? There's a specific color of pills that aren't that bad? I am under a rock, apparently.
The red pill movement is men's right activists.
Oh, no.
See themselves as in the Matrix.
Red
pill opens your eyes to how women are ruining everything and you must assert your dominance. And the blue pill is what the rest of the world takes to be complacent. We'll get into that on another day.
Yeah.
Probably when the next activists come up again
and we'll tear them to shreds.
Yeah,
like
MRAs are terrible.
We'll get to that. But not today. But not today. But this is a thing that I see all the time. Like, I was waiting for them to figure out in the media what this guy's ailment was, because he wasn't black, because we weren't told that it was territorial violence. And it came out that they're hush-hush on the neo-Nazi thing. I had to dig to find out that he was part of some neo-Nazi stuff. But it was, this is proof of the war on Christianity, because he did the Columbine thing.
Well, he also did the thing that the dude in the church in Carolina did, where there was absolutely nothing wrong with him. He was a Christian guy doing it because Jesus told him to. And now they're trying to distance themselves from him as much as possible when you can't, because his motivation was the very thing that you claim to support above all else. You know?
So, I mean, it's hard, and I have some friends, particularly my friends who have guns and like guns, who are taking this really, really hard, because it makes it, especially the white guys with guns, it makes y'all look like bad guys, because all the cray-crays are coming out. And I say cray-cray, not mentally ill, because these are the people who have rewritten their take on reality to be one of blind hate.
I think people can act crazy and not be mentally ill.
There's a difference between being crazy and being mentally ill. One of them is, you know, you have something verifiably chemically wrong with you. The other is that your worldview is just screwed up.
Or you're on spring break.
like, you know, and I get a lot of flack in the everyday, and like I spend a lot of time at Michael's house, so Michael hears these stories all the time. But I will say something, generalizations, but statistics are on my side, but not popular opinion.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because when I
get that a lot around here.
like today there was a knock at the door at my home. I peeked, and all I saw was the wrist of whoever was knocking. And it appeared to be a Caucasian man. And because of what I've been through, what I've seen, I hid and asked the white people in the house to answer the door. Because statistically, Hispanic woman opens up door, white guy there, I may be in for something deeply unpleasant.
That's a sad state of affairs.
You know, and the thing is, especially with all these gun shootings and stuff, I can never be sure that it's not one of these, you know, people going door to door, because I live in a very religious town. Somebody who's decided that, you know, if you say that you're interested in joining the church, he's not going to off you right there. That's a worry of mine, because it happened today. You know what I mean?
Wait, that happened?
You know, well, you know, people shooting, you say you go to church, you're Christian, this guy shot them in the face. And if you said you weren't, you got shot in the leg. He wanted you to suffer, but he didn't want you to die. The same thing happened in Columbine. So I have this constant paranoia at this time that, I mean, this could happen to anybody. This isn't one of those it'll never happen to me things, because it's every 3 months that somebody is shooting people. And being as marginalized as I am, I've got a bullseye here.
It's less, actually, than 3 months. It's much more often than that.
45 days-ish, I suppose.
It's, yeah, so many of these things happen that never make the news because they're just not big enough.
Yeah, a friend of ours and a friend of the show has been keeping track on what he refers to as the NRA lottery. Mm-hmm. And it's a weekly, sometimes daily occurrence in this country, weekly, where there is a shooting greater than, say, five people. You know, what's your limit on mass shooting? You know, at how many people have to die before it's then labeled as a mass shooting?
Well, I suppose that's you know what they say, one death is a tragedy, a million is a statistic.
Yeah, yeah. Lies, damn lies, and statistics.
To lighten it up a little bit, but also absolutely prove my point on on just gun control in general. If anybody listens to the very, very popular podcast Welcome to Night Vale, they have a series of running jokes about the Night Vale NRA. And Night Vale is this Lovecraftian place. It's got their own lore. And
you need
here
to
are some
to
of
it.
The bu-
it's glorious.
here are some of the bumper stickers. I just looked up their bumper stickers because you can buy them. The Night Vale NRA stickers. Guns don't kill people. It's impossible to be killed by a gun. We are all invincible to bullets, and it's a miracle. Guns don't kill people. Blood loss and organ damage do. if you say guns kill people one more time, I will shoot you with a gun and you will coincidentally die. Guns don't kill people. We are all immortal souls living temporarily in shelters of earth and meat. Guns don't kill people. People kill guns. A list of things that kill people. One, conceivably anything. Two, not guns. That is what the right wing sounds like to me every time people get murdered.
And with that, this segment is over.
Yeah, there's
no better way. No better way whatsoever to end that. Thank you. That's wonderful.
I try.
We are on to Entertainment Reviews, which is the last home stretch here. And this weekend, in fact, probably today, I think, Andy Weir's The Martian, as directed and recreated by Ridley Scott and starring Matt Damon as Mark Watney, is in theaters. And I am going to go see it tomorrow, come hell or high water. And I will tell you all about it later, but I have been rereading The Martian, and it is just a fantastic love affair with science and how it can get you out of some very bad places. So
I will point out that because trickling water was found on Mars, the movie is scientifically obsolete 4 days before it was released.
It is not. It is not scientifically obsolete at all. At all, because he was not there. That's further north. So he was in an area where there continent. Is no water.
Wrong continent. Fair. Wrong. I'll give you that one. Dang.
Yeah. Geographically different. He was geographically challenged for sure because he was on Mars alone.
Like you do.
So there you go.
Like you do.
Mike Ophelia, do you have any picks this week?
The movie Black Mass. I have not seen it yet. I am saving up my pennies to see it. Anyone listening to this, if you have seen the movie, please send us messages on whether or not it was good. I am a sucker for a good mob movie. I am a sucker for the two lead actors. And if you enjoyed The Departed, you should look up Black Mass because the guy that Jack Nicholson's character was based on is Whitey Bulger, who is the main character in Black Mass. So watch it, tell me how it is, send me money to see it, whatever. But it promises to be interesting, and I would like input.
Okay. We'll send that word out. Michael, do you have anything?
I am torn between two plugs, but one of which is a TV show that I have not finished watching all the way through, so I want to watch every episode that's available before I pass ultimate judgment. Okay. So I'm going to go on to my number two. Which I'm posting the link to their website in the show chat for you to put on the notes right now. Okay. It's called Battle Chasers Night War. It's got a Kickstarter. It's got beautiful modern like cartoony, but still you know new and shiny. It actually kind of reminds me of Bastion, the visual style. But it is a old school Final Fantasy style RPG. I've been following it. It's from guys that were formerly of Virgil Games, which built Darksiders. Which so if you like Darksiders, you might want to look to this. It's like I said, it's on Kickstarter, and it looks just amazing. The visuals are great. It's got turn-based combat. It's got isometric dungeon exploring. It's got this vast overworld that you can go all over, and you know it's got this RPG story written by guys who did really well when they wrote about the end of the world. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's their Kickstarter campaign is almost fully funded, and everything they've released about it looks really good so far. I'm really excited for this one, and I think it's worth tracking if you like old school RPGs at all, which I do. And now that we as a society have moved past blaming violent video games for all the evils of the world, you can enjoy your dungeon crawling and monster killing without feeling like you're going to go shoot up a school or something. So, if you're into it, go for it. Links in the show notes.
You may be pleased to see that, look, it has been fully funded.
Oh, it has been fully funded.
Yes. I am actually sharing a screen right now so you can see it in all of its glory.
They have more. I was looking down on their benchmarks, their stretch goals, and you know, they're not all the way down to the bottom stretch goal yet, but they hit their pledge level that they needed to get started. So
they were
you go.
Asking for $500,000 and they got almost $750,000. So
awesome.
They still have 7 days to go. So if you too want to get some of this neat stuff, town upgrades seem to be the last one, and that's probably coming soon. So who knows what you could do with this? It looks really neat. The graphics are cartoony and cool. And
the visual style is great. I've seen some bits about the gameplay. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. So,
and there you have it. Okay, I think that is going to wrap this up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for us tonight. We will be back next Friday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or thereabouts. In the meantime, the conversation should continue on the web. Head over to orellyradio.com. That's O-R-L-Y radio.com for all the links right up at the top of the page. And do watch us live and chat in the IRC like so many wonderful people. Barty, Jarman, Little Bear, and Tippy. And, of course, all of us have been in the chat room yakking it up all this time. And if you've liked what we've done here, you can help keep the lights on by following the Help Us link on the webpage, which will take you over to the aforementioned patreon.com/Cowan link. If that's too rich for you, totally understand. But, hey, do contribute to the show with topic ideas, corrections, advertising offers, unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, and unsolicited advice by emailing orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Leave a voicemail at 470-222-O-R-E-L-L-Y, O-R-L-Y, or 6759. Of course, you can also text that. We get SMS and whatever you'd like over there. Post and vote on stories. We actually have a subreddit for that, too. Leave a glowing review on whatever platform you found us on. And, of course, like us on Facebook, follow us on Tumblr, Twitter, Google+, and subscribe to the YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. We can't thank you enough for spending some time with us tonight. Until next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowan Services Network. Music for the show was created by Kevin McLeod of Incomptech.com. Thanks, everybody. And now I just have to figure out how to shut this thing down. Let's see. Because I'm doing something weird here. Where is it? That's not it. Oh, God. What am I doing? Oh, well.
Pay
no attention to that man behind the curtain. Of course, if you're actually just listening to the podcast, you're going to be getting all this, or you're not going to be getting all this. It doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, I have to go, Jenny.
Okay, no. Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Thanks for being here.
To everyone.
Toodles. Okay, and stopping the broadcast right now. Boom.